Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. A standing ovation for Senator Ted Kennedy, his first appearance on Capitol Hill since his diagnosis of brain cancer. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss was watching the dramatic return for a vote very important to the senator from Massachusetts.
Flanked by Senator Barack Obama, Ted Kennedy walked into the Senate chamber on his own power, waved to his wife in the gallery who had tears in her eyes, and put both thumbs up and shouted aye on the Medicare bill. Kennedy's in the middle of a long course of chemotherapy and radiation to treat a life-threatening brain cancer, and after his emotional appearance, returned home to Massachusetts to continue his treatment.
The president will sign new legislation on government eavesdropping because it includes what he demanded, immunity for telecommunications companies that cooperated with the government, even when snooping wasn't authorized. The spying has led to often bitter debate.
Members of this body will regret that we passed this legislation.
Critics have long complained the eavesdropping violates Americans' privacy. JonBenet Ramsey's relatives were formally cleared today of any involvement in the six-year-old's murder. Correspondent Lee Frank has more from Denver.
JonBenet's family has been under what a former district attorney called an umbrella of suspicion. But now District Attorney Mary Lacey apologizes for public perception that the Ramseys might have been involved in the 1996 murder. A new DNA testing method matches DNA on two separate pieces of the little girl's clothing. DNA pointing to an unidentified male suspect.
JonBenet's mother, Patsy Ramsey, died in 2006. A family attorney said today he wishes she was alive today to hear her family cleared of suspicion. The number of people sick from that recent salmonella outbreak continues to grow.
We continue to get reports of illness every day. The case count today is 1,017 cases.
Robert Toks of the CDC.
This ongoing outbreak is now one of the largest outbreaks of salmonellosis ever in the United States, and it's the largest foodborne outbreak of any sort in the last 10 years.
The outbreak linked to tomatoes, but FDA inspectors are searching for other possible sources. The Defense Department studying Iran's missile test today, looking at what was launched for any clues into Iran's missile capabilities. But Defense Secretary Robert Gates says it doesn't mean the U.S. is any closer to a confrontation with Iran. Northwest is announcing more job cuts, 2,500 positions. And for you, the consumer, it's joined the list of airlines now charging for checking that first bag. Are passengers deterred? Not yet, according to Tom Parsons of BestFares.com.
I'm not sure if we're going to stop flying. I think we're starting to get used to some of these new changes. The good news is we do have airlines like Southwest, AirTran, JetBlue, all those still giving us some reasonable airfares.
Stocks tumbled today on Wall Street as oil prices rebounded and over worries about the financial industry. The Dow finished 236 points lower than NASDAQ, off by 59. This is CBS News.
As the price of gas continues to rise, so does the number of fuel-saving experts. Look, the guys at Advanced Auto Parts aren't scientists inventing hydrogen engines or cellulosic ethanol. They got their PhDs in parts. Stuff like air filters, fuel filters, spark plugs, fuel system cleaners, and other things that make cars run more efficiently. Look, if you really want to save money on gas, go buy a bike. Otherwise, head on over to Advanced Auto Parts. They'll show you how to get more miles per gallon. Whatever you're working on, Advanced will help you keep the wheels turning.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
A Texas teenager already on probation finds himself in deeper trouble now.
When police in suburban Lake Worth got a basket of cookies from an 18-year-old, they had no idea they were laced with LSD. Turns out as many as a dozen police departments received drug-laced cookies. Fort Worth Police Lieutenant Paul Henderson says they discovered it too late.
Unfortunately, after learning it, there were no more food items left in the basket, leading us to believe that officers did eat them.
Now they await blood tests on seven Fort Worth officers. 18-year-old Christian Phillips was arrested. He was making the deliveries as part of his community service for assaulting an officer. Chuck Schechter, CBS News, Dallas.
Some candy testers in New Jersey are suing Cadbury's, claiming they were seriously injured while sampling a sweetener. The testers say they suffered from burning mouths and tongue injuries. They say they still don't know what was in that sweetener. The company's not commenting on the lawsuit. Cadbury's makes chocolates, gum, and Hall's cough drops. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Let the IRS veterans at Effector help stop levies and wage garnishment. We can help you get your life back in order. Our ex-IRS agents have over 100 years combined experience in IRS collection tactics. Get a free consultation and put our team of experts between you and the IRS. Call 800-536-9092. That's 800-536-9092. 800-536-9092.
A message from the Orbitz Traveler Wellness Center.
Hello, Dr. Martin Pakulski-Blatz here. I just want to tell you about the Orbitz Great American Sale, where you can save 30% on hotels in great American cities. So get going, because really, is there anything more American than America? No, no there isn't. So head over to Orbitz.com today and save.
Valid for travel 7708 through 11-2408, booked by 831-08, see site for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United States Senate decided today that we don't need the Fourth Amendment. Why don't we send it to Iraq? That's where freedom lives these days, right? The vote was 69 to 28. And in simple language, it sucks. It really sucks.
Let's fuck you. I am ready. Let's fuck you.
Later this hour, we will induct 21 Democratic members of the United States Senate into the Fourth Amendment Hall of Shame. We will name names, friends. Much of our coverage today devoted to this debacle in the United States Senate. Glenn Greenwald in half an hour will join us. He's been offering excellent commentary on this debate over the FISA law. And you can read his work at Huffington Post. That's where I find it. Caroline Frederickson, who was on the front lines of this battle, we'll talk with her. She's at the ACLU in Washington. And a former congressman, the Reverend Bob Edgar, who is the head of Common Cause, will join us briefly next hour as well. They have launched an effort with a full-page ad in today's New York Times. It's called Democracy in Distress with an American flag upside down. We'll talk about that with Common Cause leader Edgar. Also on today's program, John Garamendi, California's lieutenant governor. There's some progress. The fire lines are being pushed back at Big Sur. Some people have been allowed to reoccupy their homes. We'll also talk about that hot budget battle in Sacramento and how it will impact education in the state. And then to help me cope with this setback today, Rick Schenkman is an author, a journalist, and he's going to join us for our final hour today. His book is about America's voters, and it's entitled, Just How Stupid Are We? And we're going to take a hard look at the real reasons for the mess in this nation, and we have to at least assign some of that blame to the voters of this country. And for me, I have to share this with you. I knew this was coming. I knew the Senate would vote this way. It's been very clear for weeks. Nonetheless, I have to tell you that I feel an unusual sense of sadness today. This isn't just a political loss, you know, a setback like a farm bill or a transportation bill that doesn't go my way. I am really just struck by how our elected leaders have insulted us with this process. And I really think of it in terms of that day when Ronald Reagan was sworn in as president, one of the darkest days of my observation of politics in this country, and that incredible split screen we saw, confirmation of the October surprise, as the hostages were returned home just as Reagan was taking his oath of office. Well, I survived that. I know I'll survive this. But I just have to be honest with you that it isn't easy. And as I said later this hour, we will name the names of those senators who made the awful call today, particularly those in the Democratic Party. But first, Paul Waldman returns from Media Matters. He is co-author of the book about John McCain called Free Ride. And he does a great job there at Media Matters. First up, Paul, I got to compliment you on the piece you wrote. It seems like eons ago, but it was just last week, about the true remarks that Wes Clark made and the way the media had distorted them.
It really was extraordinary to see the way that they jumped all over him. And I think it was revealing of the kind of standing that John McCain has among the Washington media and the particulars of their affection for him, their regard for him, and what they will do to defend him when he comes in for criticism. Mm-hmm. I'm sure everybody was aware of this, but for those who won't, just briefly, Wesley Clark was on Face the Nation. He was talking about Obama and McCain's qualifications. And Bob Schieffer, the host, at one point said, well, but Obama never flew in a fighter jet and got shot down. To which Wesley Clark said, well, flying in a fighter jet and getting shot down isn't a qualification for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have thought from the reaction that he accused McCain of being a child molester, as opposed to saying something that's plainly obvious. The kind of outrage that you got, not from Republicans and conservatives, not just from them, but from members of the press, supposedly objective people who just could not believe, they were aghast that someone would actually say that the fact that John McCain was a POW doesn't in and of itself qualify him for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
So now we see this what I referred to at one point as the McCain rules, which is that it's okay for John McCain to basically base his entire campaign around the fact that he was a POW. He runs ads about it. He has web videos about it. He talks about it in his speeches. He talks about it all over his website. He mentioned it in primary debates. That's fine. But if you even raise the question of whether or not that means in and of itself that he's qualified to be president, that's not fine. And that question isn't even allowed to be asked.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a great job on that piece, and I just wanted to reiterate that because I was very impressed with your analysis. And likewise, your colleague and our alternating guest from Media Matters, Eric Bollard, has a great piece that's up on the homepage at Media Matters today about the incredible lightweight story that the New York Times Magazine did about Rush Limbaugh, published this past Sunday. And it is amazing, as Bollert details, that the writer clearly went out of his way to use the Rush Limbaugh frame and to publish this story in the alleged liberal media while bashing the liberal media and really editing that piece in a way that took out all of the edges about Rush Limbaugh. Just one example, Paul, he talked about Limbaugh's Operation Chaos. And Limbaugh's entitled to meddle in the primaries and encourage people to vote one way or another. I don't really have a problem with that. But he declined to include in that piece the most outrageous part of Operation Chaos, which was the day when Rush Limbaugh wished for riots during the Democratic Convention at the end of August in Denver this year. And I was talking with Tom Hayden last night. He was one of the Chicago 8 defendants who went on trial for crossing state lines to incite a riot. And what has Limbaugh done with a program broadcast nationally? He went across state lines to encourage people to riot. And so I am just amazed that in, what, a 7,000-word article, there was barely any criticism of Rush Limbaugh. It was just hagiography.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And the author, Zev Chaffetz, is a pretty conservative guy. And I think that's why Limbaugh was willing to open his doors to him, because he was probably pretty confident that he would get a positive profile out of it, because Limbaugh doesn't talk to reporters very much. And that's what he got. There's lots of interesting stories you could tell about Rush Limbaugh and about why he is so successful. And Chaffetz did that, but as you say, he failed to include any of the different things you could talk about, any kind of criticisms of Limbaugh. And he was actually being interviewed, Chaffetz was, on a show called On the Media, an NPR show, over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the host challenged him and said, why didn't you talk about some of the lies that he's been caught telling, some of the really despicable things he said? And Chaffetz acted as though he really wasn't aware of any of those things. So there certainly, if people want to become aware, you can go to MediaMatters.org.
Yeah, I was just going to...
Hundreds and hundreds of items on Rush Limbaugh.
And no subscription is required, Mr. Chaffetz. It's free!
So it really was about as much as Rush Limbaugh could have hoped for.
Yeah. One other item I wanted to mention. You heard my opening about the FISA vote in the Senate today. Yesterday, they debated the bill and then interrupted the debate so Republicans and I guess some Democrats could attend a memorial for Jesse Helms. And it was fascinating because the public television news hour, which I watch every night, I describe it as the default newscast of record on American television. It could be much better, but it is better than the corporate networks offer. Still, Paul, there was not one word. Not in the headlines at the beginning of the show and not in any of the major pieces that they covered in the entire hour. Not one word about the debate in the Senate and the plan for a vote today to carve out more of our constitutional rights. And it's just another one of those, things that sends a signal that those who choose the news for our consumption are so condescending and in some ways paternalistic toward the American public. And I guess somebody at PBS decided, the competition by Obama and McCain for the Hispanic vote, that's really much more important and timely than this silly little Fourth Amendment arcane debate about the Constitution. And I, for one, am really insulted by that.
Yeah, and I think a part of it is that after 7.5 years of the Bush administration, the chipping away at the Constitution has become old news. And it's almost as though we've become so used to some of the offenses that have been committed by the administration when it comes to things like the constant assertions that the president can violate the law and the different ways that in which they have decided that the laws really don't apply to them. And by the way, I'm sure that once there's a Democratic president, the conservatives will rediscover the Constitution in all its wonder.
Yeah.
And its limits on presidential power.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in some ways, so a lot of people have become just numb to it, and it's lost its power to shock them anymore.
What do we need to do? Have Madonna interrupt her affair with A-Rod to say, by the way, I'm really offended that they're taking away my Fourth Amendment rights? I mean,
you may be onto something there.
Is that what it takes to get attention?
That would work. I think that would make the, certainly on cable news, it would make them perk up.
Well, I do want
a missing white girl.
Yeah.
Then that would be something.
I want to recommend to people, find it online, either at the MSNBC Countdown page. I think Ross Story has it up. But Rachel Maddow sat in for Keith Olbermann last night. She had Jonathan Turley from George Washington University on. It's a package worth watching. They really did, I think, an excellent critical reporting job on what has occurred regarding the FISA law. So I recommend that piece of media to you. We'll continue in a moment with Paul Waldman from Media Matters. And if you have a comment, you can join us toll-free. The number's 888-5-PETER-B. And business as usual continues in Washington. Howard Wolfson, former communications director for the Clinton for President campaign, has joined the Fox News Channel. And presidential advisor Karen Hughes has been hired by Mark Penn, the former manager of the Clinton campaign, to work alongside him at Burson Marsteller. Would somebody please send me a check like the one they gave Armstrong Williams? It would help right now. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Most mattress commercials feature a laundry list of brands the stores carry. You've heard the familiar names, and they count on that. So no matter what new model is introduced, no matter how good or inferior the components in that model, you'll still relate to the brand. SC41 Furniture carries its own brand, and we think that's good. Because we want you to judge our mattress on its quality and comfort, not just the name. At our store, you can see everything that goes into our mattresses. The durable slat suspension we adjust to each person, the high-grade carbon steel coils that hold their tension and deliver excellent support, latex cushioning made with air-circulating channels and free of all harmful chemicals, ultra-clean wool lining, and stretch cotton mattress covers that feel soft next to your body. You'll find this unique mattress made with only the highest quality components at one place, SC41 Furniture, on 41st Avenue, right off Highway 1, across from the Home Depot in Santa Cruz, on the web at sc41.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice's fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
On the Peter B. Collins Show, Glenn Greenwald, a sharp critic of the FISA law and Barack Obama's shift on it. He'll join us about 10 minutes from now. And we continue with Paul Waldman, a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. Their powerful website, as we mentioned, is available free to inquiring minds, including conservatives. Yes, you can go to MediaMatters.org and see it for yourself. Paul, you have a piece up at the American Prospect right now about John McCain's new TV spot, and it reinforces what you said a few minutes ago about how he shamelessly invokes his veteran service and uses that to try to contrast himself. And this one seems to be a takeoff on his attack on Hillary Clinton last year, because she had inserted an earmark for some money for a Woodstock museum or something like that. And he said, well, I couldn't go to Woodstock because I was tied up at the time. And this kind of invokes that same thing, and it tries to tie Barack Obama to hippies of the 1960s, only Obama's a little too young for that, isn't he?
Yeah, he was born in 1961, and the ad opens with pictures of hippies, and the voiceover says it was the summer of love, change, and hope, and you notice that those are the terms that Obama likes to use. And then it goes to telling the story of John McCain being a POW in Vietnam. And it's just remarkable how the Republicans will just go back to the well of hatred of hippies over and over and over again, and I think that it loses its power with each passing election, as there are fewer and fewer people around who, you know, get their blood boiling at the sight of some hippies.
Mm-hmm.
So the strangest thing to my mind about this ad was the way it tries to tries to sort of reframe the message that Obama is sending. And the end of the ad says, "Don't hope for a better life, vote for one." And it seems a little odd for a presidential candidate to be telling people not to hope. That doesn't really sound like it's much of a recipe for success. But yet again, we have the McCain campaign invoking that Vietnam story. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that it's certainly perfectly legitimate for him to do that if he wants to. But what isn't legitimate is for him to constantly be talking about how reluctant he is to talk about Vietnam, mm-hmm. when the truth is that he talks about it all the time, and he puts it in his ads, and he bases his entire campaign around it. So I think that, you know, it's if he's going to do that, it's perfectly legitimate to talk about what that experience really taught him, and what sorts of lessons he's learned, and how that relates to the challenges that he would face as president now at the beginning of the 21st century. I think there are some real serious questions you could ask and a serious discussion you could have. But what we've seen is that anytime somebody begins to ask those questions, the immediate response is, "Oh, you're attacking him for being a war hero," and you're just not allowed to talk about it. The only person who's allowed to talk about it is John McCain.
Well, and somehow I just imagine in the next phase they'll find a way to connect Jane Fonda and her trip to Hanoi with Reverend Jeremiah Wright. There's no connection, obviously, but they'll manufacture one. Paul, another story that is covered at Media Matters this week is the media's very weak coverage of the truth about what Obama is saying about tax policy and the economy and what John McCain is saying. And they have been repeating a series of false claims that Obama would raise taxes on small business owners.
Yeah, this is something that the press does an election after election, and it's just infuriating, and it's something that I've been infuriated about for many years. Here you have a case that's very similar to something that George Bush did. We can be frank about this. The McCain campaign and McCain himself are lying about what Barack Obama's tax plan would do, and the press is letting them get away with it. Obama's plan would allow rates to increase on the top rates, people who make over $250,000 a year. There are a small number of small business owners who actually fall into that category, about 470,000 or so,
mm-hmm.
maybe 480,000,
mm-hmm.
Who are very wealthy people who have small business income. What the McCain campaign is doing is going out and saying the Obama tax plan raises taxes on 23 million small businesses. Now, that happens to be something like the total number of small businesses in America. When they say that Obama's plan would raise taxes on every single one of them, they're just lying. It's simply not true. It's not a matter of opinion or spin or shading. It's just a lie. And the press will not call them on it. We've documented case after case after case where they just quote McCain or one of his representatives saying that Obama's going to raise taxes on 23 million small businesses, and they don't correct it. And that makes them an accessory to that lie. But they just they don't seem to get the message that it doesn't mean they're taking Obama's side if they correct McCain. It means they're standing up for the truth.
Paul Waldman, MediaMatters.org. Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments, providing a unique perspective to investors for over 50 years. Franklin Templeton Investments gain from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. The price of gasoline has already affected the economy and the price of almost everything. Commuters have had to make some adjustments.
Of the 89% of workers who said that they drive to work, nearly half, 47%, reported they had to give up something in order to afford the gas needed for their commute.
Some specifics from a new survey after this.
Cubicles, temporary housing for the business world. Corporate America's way of saying close but no cigar, or door, or dignity. These open-air monuments to labor leave you exposed to all the workplace elements, and yet there you sit, every day waiting to upgrade. Well, at Budget Rent-A-Car, we're in the upgrading business. To prove it, we're offering you the big boy upgrade. A single-class upgrade every time you rent a car. It's just one more way Budget is upgrading the entire rental car experience. We call it big boy service without the big boy prices. Too long a motto to hang in a cube, but a good way to make sure that all the services we offer, from e-receipt to fast brake, get you on the road faster and happier. So if you want the big boy upgrade, stick a note on that half a wall you call a workstation and remind yourself to rent like a genius. Show off your business sense and you can get a single class upgrade every time you rent. Just go to budget.com/upgrade. Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Subject to availability. See website for full terms and conditions.
Jennifer Grass, senior career advisor for CareerBuilder.com, which did the new commuter survey, says almost everybody's had to give up something because of gas prices.
35% said that they ate out less. 31% said that they spent less money on entertainment overall. 27% actually said that they bought less expensive groceries. 24% said that they went shopping for clothes less. 21% said that they did not go on vacation, had not planned on going on vacation until they saw some relief.
You can see how all of that is going to affect the economy, too.
In addition to modifying their personal budgets and their spending choices, they're actually also modifying their commuting habits to manage the adverse effects.
There's a limit for most as to how far they'll drive now.
Given the cost of gas today, 60% of workers said they would be willing to drive up to 20 miles to the office. 29% said they would only drive up to 10 miles. And then there was another 10% that said they would only drive up to 5 miles, and that was it.
It's either move closer or get some kind of concession from their employers.
Certainly the cheapest way to travel is no travel at all. Telecommuting options are becoming very popular, and I think you see more employers today offering flexible work arrangements, and they may be more willing to accommodate a request to work from home a day or two that will help to mitigate some of those commuting costs.
Were the results of this survey surprising?
Looking at the number of those that said they had been impacted to the degree that they had been, I think was higher than we had expected.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
You're listening to the greatest talk radio station on the planet, KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage.
How about the Fourth Amendment?
Conversation toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Yeah, the Fourth Amendment used to be part of those San Francisco values, but Speaker Pelosi led the sellout, and so it's just left me dangling. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show because, well, we're committed to do this program. In a moment, Glenn Greenwald will join us, constitutional lawyer and a writer who's been spot on in analyzing the Democratic cave-in on FISA. At the top of next hour, Caroline Fredrickson from the ACLU. She's been on the front lines of this battle. We'll see how she's doing today. And Bob Edgar, former member of Congress and a reverend in his own right, now leading Common Cause. We'll talk about their Democracy in Distress campaign. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And before we talk to Glenn Greenwald, I promise the induction of 21 Democratic senators into the Fourth Amendment Hall of Shame. A little music, please. These are the Democrats who voted to pass this FISA bill today. Baucus of Montana, Bayh of Indiana, Carper of Delaware, Casey of Pennsylvania, Conrad of North Dakota, Feinstein of California, Inouye of Hawaii, Johnson of South Dakota, Cole of Wisconsin, Landro from Oil and Gas. And in the roll call right about that point, I expected them to call for Senator Kafka's vote. The list continues. Joey Lieberman, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, McCaskill of Missouri, Mikulski of Maryland, Nelson Brothers, Florida and Nebraska. And that's not all. Obama of Illinois, Pryor of Arkansas, Webb of Virginia, and especially shameful, former U.S. Attorney Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. Two senators didn't do the deed at all. Ted Kennedy, of course, is recovering from brain tumor surgery. And John McCain lost his mind a long time ago, and he did not show up to vote on this critical legislation today. Glenn Greenwald has been writing at Salon, and I've been picking up his reporting as well at the Huffington Post. And, Glenn, I thank you for the excellent effort that you and many others put in to try to stop this freight train that just ran us over.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it probably would have happened, you know, many months ago had it not been for sort of online activism and activism elsewhere of citizens who are so opposed to this bill because it had the standard cast of bipartisan lobbyists and, you know, pundits and the media all lined up behind it. They probably would have passed it without much controversy back in December when they were ready to. So it ended up being delayed by 6 or 7 months. But as you say, it was a freight train that, like so many corrupt Beltway freight trains, proved impossible to stop.
And Glenn, this one is so different because I mentioned this earlier, that when I'm on the losing side of a farm bill or some other appropriation bill, I mean, even some of these Iraq supplementals that I bitterly oppose, I can kind of get over that because there's a sense that it's not permanent, that these are temporary things that, you know, we can try to fix next time around. And this is a fairly permanent effort. And in the history of this country, when we've given up rights, very few of those have ever been returned and never in the original form.
Right. It's permanent, I think, in two important ways. One is the way that you just described, which is we basically have taken the powers that the president claimed for himself in secret and against the law back in 2001 when he ordered warrantless spying on our private conversations and legalized that in a bipartisan way. And so that assault on the Fourth Amendment, that power to vest in the government the ability to spy on our communications with no warrant, exactly what the founders wanted to avoid, probably is more or less permanent. And then there's another, I think, still more nefarious way that our country has been radically transformed by this bill, which is the fact that this is probably the single most flagrant act of lawbreaking over the last certainly 7 years and probably several decades since at least Watergate, where we have a law that says it is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison to do exactly what the government did. And the Congress today acted to protect the lawbreakers, including the telecommunication industry, by giving them retroactive immunity, telling them they don't even have to go to a court of law to answer for their conduct, and basically brought an end to any hope that there will be an investigation or an adjudication in a court of law as to whether or not the people who are alleged to have broken the law really did so. It's a destruction of the rule of law, and this idea that the president, if he tells you to do something and tells you it's legal, has the power to make it legal, that's just as pernicious as the surveillance powers themselves.
And Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington, was on with Rachel Maddow on Countdown last night. I recommend it to anybody who hasn't seen it. The two of them, I think, did an excellent job with a point of view describing what has been going on. But Turley said, you know, that based on, he cited Judge Vaughn Walker here in San Francisco, who's been presiding over some of these lawsuits, which are likely to be dismissed after the enactment of this law. And he said that there was not just one illegal act, not just one felony, that it happened at least 30 times, and that this is a crime that's hiding in plain view, and that we have in the United States Senate 100 witnesses to a crime who have chosen not only to do nothing, but to legalize the lawbreaking that they have clearly observed.
It's the most, that's the most incredible part. I mean, the New York Times in December of 2005 wrote that article uncovering the fact that the Bush administration was spying without warrants, which, as I said, is a felony. And in as clear of English as the law can make it, it says any spying outside of the parameters of the statute is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison. And when the president got caught doing that, he didn't deny that he was doing it. He did the opposite. He went on television 2 days later, and he admitted that he was doing it, said he was proud of the fact that he was doing it, and vowed to continue to do it, essentially saying that he believes that he's above the law, that he does not need to comply with the laws that we, the American people, enact through our Congress. And the Congress has known about this, as you say, as Professor Curley said, it's hiding in plain sight. And not only did the Congress do nothing, they didn't do what the founders intended, exercise oversight and ultimately impeach if the lawbreaking doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Today they voted to sanction retroactively that behavior and therefore to legalize the premise that the president is above the law, and that when well-connected corporations in this country decide that they're going to break the law, they can do that with impunity. And then that's why I say it's a real assault on the rule of law.
And what about the prohibition in the Constitution against post ipso facto? That's retroactive legislation.
There's some dispute about what the exact scope of that clause is among constitutional scholars, in fairness. The founders were concerned about the ability to have Congress pass laws to make an act illegal that at the time that it was undertaken was actually legal. So if tomorrow you go and engage in behavior acts and it's perfectly legal, if the Congress decides that they want to turn you into a criminal, the next day they could go and say, we retroactively make that conduct illegal and therefore want to imprison you for it. Whether that clause actually prohibits a law that retroactively renders an illegal act illegal is very much a dispute, but the ACLU and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the great organization in San Francisco, have already announced they're going to challenge the constitutionality of this bill in court right away, and I have no doubt that will be one of the grounds for the challenge.
We're going to talk with Caroline Fredrickson from the ACLU about that in about half an hour. And Glenn Greenwald, I wanted to ask you, as you see this situation and you saw it evolve, we had a moment of hope during late February and on into the spring as Speaker Pelosi appeared to be rejecting the intimidation and the pressure from the Senate bill and the demands from the White House that they not let the Protect America Act expire at the end of February. So she appeared to be standing her ground. And during that interim period, I talked to a number of progressives like Maxine Waters, Barbara Lee, and other Keith Ellison, other members of the House. And they had great concerns that this was not going to last, and certainly those concerns have been borne out. What I've been trying to figure out is what happened. What kind of deal was cut? And I chose the music Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap because this is the dirtiest of deeds, and I don't see much of a payoff that the Democrats got for it. And I am scratching my bald head trying to figure out why they would trade away our constitutional rights for what they perceive as a short-term political gain.
It's really bizarre if you look at it in that way, and I think you're right that it did seem like they stood their ground. But what's so bizarre about it is if they were going to capitulate this way and give the president everything that he wanted, as they did today, it made so much more sense to just do it back in February, because by standing their ground back then, what they did was they subjected their freshmen and vulnerable members to all kinds of attack ads running their district saying they were soft on terrorism and didn't want to listen in when Osama bin Laden called. They picked this very public fight only to, at the end, cave in yet again and look weak and pitiful by capitulating. And so you're right. The question then arises, why not just go capitulate back then? I think the mistaken premise there is that back in February, they really weren't standing their ground in the sense that they were standing up for the Constitution or in favor of the rule of law or refusing to cave in. The reality is that last August, when the Protect America Act was passed, the Bush administration was telling the Senate and the Congress that they had to pass this new bill to give the president more powers or else a terrorist attack would probably happen over the August recess and the blood would be on the hands of Congress. And the Senate waited until the very last day to pass that Protect America Act and threw it in the lap of the House and basically gave them a day to pass it with no changes. And the Senate tried to do that again to the House in February when the Protect America Act was about to expire, and they passed this new bill right before the expiration, and they gave it to the House and said, okay, you better pass the bill that we just passed, otherwise the Protect America Act will expire. And the House wasn't really standing up to the White House when they refused to pass it. They were really just standing up to the Senate and saying, look, of course we're going to capitulate to the White House and cave in here like we always do, but we're going to do it on our own timetable. We're not going to be bullied by you, the Senate, any longer in terms of telling us that we have to do it by a certain date and we can't make any changes. And that was what the real defiance was. And what they did now is they got around to capitulating like they said they would on their own timetable. And, you know, the real reason is because these orders were ready to expire in August under the Protect America Act. And I think the Obama campaign was afraid that as they went to their convention in August and these orders expired, that they would have a club to beat Obama over the head with and say he's soft on terrorism. And then they told the House, look, you need to get something done and take this issue off the table.
But, Glenn, any of those orders that were about to expire could have been renewed under the existing 1978 FISA law, could they not?
Well, they could have been those orders were orders that were authorized by the Protect America Act. I mean, they're basically warrantless orders, warrantless surveillance orders. And they were authorized by the Protect America Act, and they had a one-year expiration. So they were obtained in August. They were scheduled to expire in August, but all the House and Senate had to do was to pass a new bill just extending those orders by 6 months or by a year, so that way it would take that issue off the table. But they were concerned because the president would have vetoed it, and instead of wanting that fight and saying, look, the president's jeopardizing our country by vetoing this bill because he wants immunity for the telecoms, they were afraid of that fight. They ran away, and they gave the president what he wanted instead.
We're talking with Glenn Greenwald here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a comment or a question, call me now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. As I mentioned, Caroline Fredrickson from the ACLU will join us at the top of next hour, and we'll talk about what they plan to do to pursue constitutional challenges to this ugly bill that's passed. And I'm sure the president will sign it lickety-split. Interesting to see what kind of signing statements he'll attach to this baby.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays
following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, the Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dreams?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lapert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking about the incredible cave-in capitulation by the Democrats in Washington in the House and today in the United States Senate over the president's power grab, an invasion of our Fourth Amendment rights. This is a very tragic day in America, in my opinion. We're talking with Glenn Greenwald, who has written very effectively about these issues. And Glenn, I want to recommend that people go to, I found it at Huffington Post. You probably have it up at Salon.com, too. And this was published on July 3rd. It's your point-by-point rebuttal to Barack Obama's statement on his website, which, to be fair, was a nice gesture on his part to respond to the more than 20,000 people who took the trouble to post their objections to his changed position on the campaign website. But that said, it was a very ineffective response. And let's just talk about one key issue that I heard over and over again. And there was Jay Rockefeller selling us out on it again earlier today, saying that this law asserts that FISA is the exclusive authority for wiretapping in this country. And as you pointed out, the president brazenly broke the law, even though it has felony penalties and 5 years in jail as a possible sentence per violation. That the Democrats have papered over that, and they keep pointing to the exclusivity clause in this new bill and saying, well, this reasserts that this is the exclusive source of authority. Well, it didn't stop them last time. It's not about to stop them in the future. It's bogus. Glenn? Hello, Glenn. Katrina, we lost Glenn, if you could call him back. Maybe the NSA. Oh, let me hang up on that line. Now you're clear.
And I'm not sure what happened to Glenn, but we will get him right back here. Meanwhile, Ben in Salinas has called, and I know Ben is passionate about our Constitution. Hi, Ben.
Good afternoon. I cannot explain the extent of my disgust. Here's what I reach very few conclusions, and I think that they're valid. I think that they're, all of them, including Obama and the new sheriff and Tom Pelosi, they're being blackmailed. Now, it could be that they are, there is a contingency that they've been briefed on that we don't know about, or could it also be, listen to me, Republicans out there, could it be that they have already been victims of this spying that has gone on all these means of communication since March of 2001? Could it be that they've already become victims of their own ineptness, and now they got to go along to get along to cover their own butts? And what are the contingencies? And in closing, we got floods, we got fires. How many people out there, do you listeners that are comfortable in your home, how many of those people are going to be allowed to return to their homes with government assistance? I say none, because the money ain't there. It's being spent off in Iraq, and not one of you Republicans out there who support Bush have the guts to stand up and say, enough, enough, enough. This money belongs to we, the taxpayer, just like the power. Either no man is above the law, or they are. It looks like this group is.
All right, Ben. Thank you very much.
Sorry for my...
Glenn, while we were dialing you back, Ben was floating an idea that has been coming at me pretty frequently over the last few days in phone calls and emails, and that is a suspicion that the wiretaps that have already occurred have somehow compromised the Democratic leaders and all those people who may have voted for this in the House and the Senate. And I don't like to spin into really dark theories, but we've kind of hit a roadblock with trying to explain this rationally, and so you do have to at least explore the possibility that the Democrats have been compromised in some manner and therefore cannot vote their consciences. Is that plausible?
Well, part of that always seems to me to be a little bit of an attempt to give the Democrats a little bit too much credit, in the sense that, oh, if only they weren't being put, you know, with a gun to their head, they would do the right thing here. And I'm not sure that's really true. I mean, I think that the idea that, you know, the Democratic Party and the vast majority of its members in Congress are eager to fight for our constitutional liberties and against the Bush administration, I think, is a little bit of a fantasy, unfortunately. What I will say is that it's certainly the case. What we do know with certainty is that for decades before FISA was enacted, when the government could eavesdrop without judicial oversight, the government, when run by both parties, absolutely abused those spying powers to spy on political opponents and people who they thought were politically threatening and use it to blackmail people. They tried to, in the 60s, blackmail Martin Luther King and even cajole him to commit suicide. And so it's hardly a fantasy to think that this administration would have used those spying powers against political opponents for leverage. I just think it's highly implausible that the entire Democratic leadership is being subjected to mass blackmail, and that's been kept under wraps.
Well, and
it's more, you know, the case that they just don't believe in, that they just are willing to support these things.
Well, and this could have been a window to expose it. If Obama had taken a real leadership position and made this a defining issue of the campaign, I think it would have been very effective politically. He sounded these themes about trying to get past the politics of fear, and that's what this is all about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this administration is the most unpopular administration in modern American history. People in this country, with very few exceptions, are now immune to those kind of fear-mongering appeals based on terrorism. You better give up your rights or you're going to be slaughtered by the terrorists. And you're absolutely right. Obama had predicated his campaign for so long on refusing to succumb to that sort of those sorts of pressure tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes what he did here so disappointing. It really returns to the failed Democratic politics of the past, where the Democrats are petrified of their own shadow and capitulate anytime you want to call them soft on terrorism.
We're joined by Andy from New York. Got a minute, Andy? What's your comment?
Yeah, Peter and Glenn, I just agree totally with what you guys are saying. And Jonathan Turley, I think, said it great. This is no compromise. It's just a complete cave-in. And I just wish these guys would stand up for something. I mean, they could stand up, but they look like cowards when they do this, and they give in, they give up our civil liberties. And it's just so frustrating to see this happen. It just becomes so disillusioned with the whole system.
Well, and it's hard to imagine there was some grand political scheme that said, yeah, let's separate Obama from the progressive base that helped him win the primaries. I simply don't get it. Andy, thanks for your call. It's always great to hear from you. Glenn Greenwald, thank you for your intrepid work on this. I've invited people to take a look at your point-by-point rebuttal to Barack Obama's comments on this, and I hope you'll keep struggling. This is a very difficult setback to take.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right. Good to talk with you. That's Glenn Greenwald. You can read his work at Huffington Post and other outlets on the web. We're going to take a break and return. As I mentioned, we'll be joined by Caroline Fredrickson from the ACLU in Washington. We'll find out their plans to challenge this piece of crap. And Bob Edgar, the head of Common Cause, will join us to talk about their campaign called Democracy in Distress. He wants you to join in. That's all ahead in the next hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. She's bummed out, too. Talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A big day in the Senate.
The ailing Senator Ted Kennedy returned for a dramatic vote, and Democrats won a big victory on Medicare. I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill.
In the JonBenet Ramsey case, a letter from the Boulder DA.
This letter actually officially clears the Ramsey family.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It was a dramatic and emotional moment in the U.S. Senate this afternoon.
To resounding applause, Ted Kennedy made a dramatic return to the Senate to vote on the Medicare bill, flying in from Massachusetts where he's being treated for a deadly form of brain cancer, and he was on the winning side. Under pressure from doctors and seniors, large numbers of Republicans abandoned President Bush and voted for the measure. Democrat Chuck Schumer says it's vital to stop a 10% cut to doctors who treat Medicare patients.
If you care about seniors, if you care about fair pay for pharmacists and doctors, the only vote is yes.
The president has threatened a veto because this is paid for by trimming payments to private insurance companies who compete for Medicare patients, a program he's long championed. But the bill passed with veto-proof margins in both the House and Senate. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Earlier, the Senate voted 69-28 to approve new rules for electronic surveillance of suspected terrorists. It includes immunity from lawsuits for telecommunications companies that cooperate with the government. It's already passed the House, and President Bush says he'll sign it.
This vital intelligence bill will allow our national security professionals to quickly and effectively monitor the plans of terrorists outside the United States while respecting the liberties of the American people.
Now this.
A message from the Orbitz Traveler Wellness Center.
Hi, this is Dr. Martin Pakulski-Blatz. Am I here to tell you that there's no reason to worry about the price of your flight dropping after you book? Yes. With Orbitz Price Assurance, if another customer books the same flight for less, will Orbitz automatically send you the difference in cash? Also, yes. Is this the best news you've ever heard? I don't even know you, but yes.
Visit Orbitz.com today. Same flight and same dates, times, airlines, restrictions, $250 maximum refund.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Instead of paying more for car insurance, you'd rather pay less. Call you crazy, but for some strange reason, you like saving money. And guess what? With things like money-saving rates, multi-car discounts, and good driver discounts, GEICO's always looking for ways to lower what you pay for great car insurance. Huh. Guess you can call us crazy, too.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
JonBenet Ramsey's parents and her older brother Burke were under a cloud of suspicion almost as soon as the six-year-old beauty queen was found murdered in their Boulder, Colorado home. Today, the district attorney informed John Ramsey that new DNA evidence has exonerated the family. Doug Longany, a producer for the CBS News broadcast 48 Hours, has been following this story.
Now with two independent pieces of DNA, the Boulder District Attorney's Office has released a letter that officially clears the Ramsey family, that includes John, Patsy, and their immediate family, of any involvement in the murder of JonBenet Ramsey back in December of 1996.
Correspondent Aaron Moriarty reports for 48 Hours.
What's sad and poignant about this letter is that it comes too late for Patsy Ramsey, who was really the one that police and investigators have really pointed to publicly as the killer of the daughter. And it comes too late for her because she died of cancer.
That was 2 years ago. John Ramsey says he hopes the DNA findings will lead to his daughter's killer. Defense Secretary Gates confirmed today that the Air Force tanker contract will be rebid. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv says that gives Boeing a second chance.
The contract's worth around $35 billion. The Air Force already chose a winner, Northrop Grumman, with a large European partner that immediately ran into pressure by members of Congress from the states of Washington and Kansas, where Boeing would like to make the next generation of refueling tanker planes. The Government Accountability Office declared that the bidding process was flawed.
This time, Secretary Gates says his office, not the Air Force, will oversee the competition. Jesse Jackson has apologized for a disparaging remark he made about Barack Obama. He thought he was having a private chat during a break in a TV appearance and didn't realize his mic was on. Jackson says he supports Obama unequivocally. The salmonella may have been in the salsa. While raw tomatoes remain under suspicion, Dr. Robert Toks at the Centers for Disease Control says hot peppers are now also considered a possible source.
The evidence implicating tomatoes was earlier in the outbreak is strong. And the evidence that suggests there's illness associated with jalapeno peppers is also quite strong.
More than 1,000 illnesses have been confirmed. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
As the price of gas continues to rise, so does the number of fuel-saving experts. Look, the guys at Advanced Auto Parts aren't scientists inventing hydrogen engines or cellulosic ethanol. They got their PhDs in parts. Stuff like air filters, fuel filters, spark plugs, fuel system cleaners, and other things that make cars run more efficiently. Look, if you really want to save money on gas, go buy a bike. Otherwise, head on over to Advanced Auto Parts. They'll show you how to get more miles per gallon. Whatever you're working on, Advanced will help you keep the wheels turning.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
I don't want my MTV. I don't want thin thighs in 30 days. I want my Fourth Amendment rights back. In a moment, Caroline Fredrickson from the ACLU. Coming up in a few minutes, Bob Edgar, the head of Common Cause. And later this hour, California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. Our toll-free number is 888-5 Peter B. You're welcome to call, and your calls are subject to monitoring and interception transcription by the National Security Agency. Caroline Fredrickson is director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Washington Legislative Office, and she has been on the front line leading the charge, trying to persuade members of the House and Senate not to do the deed that was certified and delivered by the United States Senate today. And that ugly vote, 69 to 28, 21 Democrats voting in favor of this draconian rollback of our constitutional rights. Caroline, first and foremost, thanks to you and your colleagues for the hard work that you put into this struggle.
Well, and thanks to you, and I have to say your many colleagues around the country who are actually doing very, very critical work keeping people informed of the real news, making them aware that there are other opinions besides the one they hear on the corporate media, and making sure that these issues are fully understandable to the American people. And I think as a collective matter, I think we've actually done a pretty good job of elevating this discussion from what, you know, people thought would really be a footnote to something that has been, you know, front and center for a lot of Americans.
Well, you're a woman of a sunny disposition. I mean, yes, we worked hard. I just had Glenn Greenwald on. The blogosphere was terrific on this issue, but we didn't penetrate the mainstream. Last night on the public television news hour, where you appeared a couple of weeks ago after the House cave-in, there was not one word about the Senate debate or the impending vote on Wednesday. And it wasn't even in the headlines at the beginning of the news report. And there was a great package that Rachel Maddow did with Jonathan Turley on MSNBC. But, you know, that reaches about 500,000 people
right,
a night.
Right. No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there's definitely been a lack of attention from the media, considering the magnitude of what's happening right now. And, you know, I think it's really interesting to me because there has been the description of this bill by people who are trying to defend it, and they say, well, you know, Americans abroad will now, if our government wants to target them for eavesdropping, they'll have to get a warrant. And we say, well, that's all well and good, but what about the 300 million Americans here at home whose every single call and email that happens to have any international connection is now open for your rifling, for your reading, for your storing, for your data mining, for all of those purposes, every single last one of those without any court oversight. And you know Congress is not going to do much oversight.
And Caroline, as I watched the final debate on C-SPAN this morning and saw people like Jay Rockefeller go up there and defend this piece of crap, and actually try to sell it to us, you know, arguing that it's good for us, it struck me that they are secure in the knowledge that we are marginalized, that those who have stood up for the Constitution on this matter, members of both parties, can be safely ignored as they strut through this and sound these themes about, oh, we've reinforced the exclusivity of the FISA laws, the only source for wiretapping.
Maybe I can be a little bit more optimistic than you. And maybe it's that's part of my nature as a lobbyist for the ACLU during the Bush administration. Without a sense of optimism, I'd never make it to work every day, right? So,
yeah.
But let me just put it in perspective a little bit. You know, from where we were in the worst days, right? Let's go back to the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act, talk about a piece of junk, right? This is legislation that Congress cobbled together from things off the shelf, every wish list item from the FBI and the other security agencies that had just been waiting for an opportunity to come alive. They were cobbled together rapidly, jammed through Congress with barely a member of Congress ever reading the bill. And there was one lonely figure who voted no.
Barbara Lee.
No, well, I'm talking about in the Senate.
Oh.
It was Russ Feingold.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Feingold was the only senator who voted no. We did have Barbara Lee and a handful of House members who voted no as well. And, you know, again, I may sound like a Pollyanna, but we get from there to the point where we actually have a majority of the Democrats voting no on this bill. We had Harry Reid saying today that he wants to revisit this in the next Congress, that there, you know, and this is another thing I think your listeners will be interested in. There are three provisions of the Patriot Act that's where the sunset expires next year. And those provisions are pretty related to this piece of legislation. One of them that I think a lot of people are familiar with is the library records provision.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is something called the John Doe roving wiretap. And that sounds very complicated, but basically it's very similar to the power that was granted to the administration in this bill in that the wiretaps at issue, they don't have to specify who, what, where, or why, right? It's just like we want to make sure if somebody's changing phones, we can keep tracking them. And that sort of, you know, gives them the opportunity to do a whole lot of mischief. So those things are going to happen. And Harry Reid said today exactly what we've been saying, which is that this debate, you know, is going to come back. And we are going to fight again in the next battle in the next Congress. And we have the majority leader in the Senate who has pledged to do so, who has voted no on this bill today and said that he wants to revisit this in the next Congress. We had Hillary Clinton who voted no on the bill. We had the leadership of Senator Feingold, Senator Leahy's Judiciary Committee chairman, Senator Dodd, the chairman of the Banking Committee. I mean, these are some pretty powerful people. And so, yes, I mean, the optics are bad. We lost. It was a pretty overwhelming vote in favor of a terrible bill. But I'm looking at how to sort of move on to the next part of this battle because I tell you, we're not done.
Yeah.
We at the ACLU are not done.
And how about some lawsuits? How about a constitutional challenge, Caroline? You up for that?
Absolutely. I think it's on its way.
Okay. Tell us what the angle might be.
Well, you know, the ACLU has already pursued litigation against the National Security Agency. That lawsuit went to through the district court in Detroit, and we won a very definitive victory in that court based on the argument that the president's warrantless wiretapping program violated both the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, as well as FISA.
Mm-hmm.
FISA's obvious. They were ignoring the requirements of the law. The Fourth Amendment is also fairly obvious to people, I think, because, you know, once you start invading people's privacy, that implicates the Fourth Amendment very directly. The First Amendment was based on the fact that our plaintiffs in that case were some very well-known academics and writers, journalists who do a lot of work in the Middle East and have confidential sources and people who they don't want to have their identity known because there could be retaliation. For example, you know, the journalists who write about third-party movements or dissident groups or things like that.
Yeah, Jim Bamford is a member of that plaintiff group.
Yes, exactly. Jim Bamford and other people who really, you know, thought, you know what, they're going to start listening to my phone calls, so I am now. So there you, it's a process of intimidation, right? If you think, if you're having sensitive phone calls or emails and you know that the government's listening in, you're going to stop having those. That's a First Amendment issue. So those are the main bases. And our, you know, our legal department is still in the process of formalizing what they're going to do with this legislation, what's the angle, but I assume it's going to be along those lines. The Fourth Amendment is very clear. The First Amendment is very clear. And I think, you know, I'd be surprised if they didn't attack this bill just the same as they attacked the NSA warrantless wiretapping program. Now, just so your listeners know, we did win in the district court. We lost in the Sixth Circuit, but basically what the Sixth Circuit said was we're not even going to get to the merits of this issue because you can't prove that you've been spied on, right? The ultimate catch-22, the administration never tells anybody who it's spying on, and you can't sue them because you can't prove that you've been spied on. You know, we're going to go after that. I think we have a stronger case, actually, with the way that this bill is written, because guess what? We're all being spied on now.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear. They're listening to all of our international phone calls and emails. And I'll just give you an example based on my own family. My mother, who is a listener and lives in the Bay Area, she was calling her satellite dish company to find out where she could find Bill Mayer on the programming, and she happened to call the Philippines. That was very interesting. You know, how many Americans call their, you know, whatever company they need assistance from, their phone company or their credit card company or their computer company or software company or whatever, and end up talking to somebody in India or Philippines or somewhere. So we're all making international phone calls. We're all sending international emails without even realizing it, which means that we are all now could be plaintiffs in this lawsuit.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Laurie in Marin County joins us. Welcome, Laurie. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Caroline Fredrickson.
Hi. You know, this FISA vote, I think, is really, really going to backfire on Obama. I mean, I have supported Obama from the very beginning, but I also said, no questions asked, if Hillary got the nomination, I would support her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you Google Hillary votes no on FISA, there are pages and pages that are spotlighting her voting no, Obama voting yes. And there's people talking about, you know, rethink Clinton 08. And I think that this is just going to open. I'm scared. I'm just really scared, and I just wanted people to know that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you pointing that out, Laurie, and I do understand it's caused me to rethink my support of Barack Obama. I'm not ready to jilt him at this point, but I'm very angry. And the big problem for me, Caroline, is I feel taken advantage of. I feel that they look at progressives and say they've got nowhere to go. We can sell out on the Fourth Amendment without any real repercussions, and I resent that.
Well, no, absolutely, and I think it's indicative of, you know, some of the typical Washington D.C. responses. You know, for somebody who sold himself as a new kind of politician, a man who's going to change the way that people do business here,
mm-hmm.
It really smelled a lot like the old-fashioned kind of way that politicians do business.
That
sort of looking at the polls, putting their finger in the wind, and deciding what position to take this week as opposed to the position they took last week.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are obviously very disappointed. But you know, he also did say he's going to get his attorney general to look into the illegalities of the program. He's going to revisit the issue, and we still have an opportunity on immunity, which he claims to still oppose.
Mm-hmm.
Those cases will not probably have progressed far enough for the immunity provisions to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll still be fighting.
All right.
If they're still fighting, we can still repeal that immunity provision and set those cases back on the right track.
And Caroline Frederickson, you're still fighting. That gives me great comfort. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll talk again. That's the ACLU. Caroline Frederickson in Washington, head of their legislative office. Coming up next, Bob Edgar from Common Cause wants to enlist you in his campaign called Democracy in Distress. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juke at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Installing new transmitter, 50,000 cool ones. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains. Priceless.
KRXA 540. Think for yourself. Good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA. Couple of crashes out there. Monterey, first of all, Highway 68 at York Road. Two cars, they've pulled into the bus pullout off to the side. CHP is on the scene taking a report. For Carmel, southbound 1 just before Carpenter Street. Three-car crash. All the activity in the center divide. CHP also on the scene there. Look for heavy traffic as you approach the scene. Northbound 17 after Idlewild Drive. Three-car crash cleared to the shoulder and has you backed up from about Big Moody Curve. And, of course, some heavy traffic once you get to the Fish Hook in Santa Cruz. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to cars that are wrecked in Monterey? Well, about half the cars are salvaged, get fixed up and resold. Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
My Fourth Amendment back. Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. I'm Peter B. Collins. The B today stands for bummed out. After what the United States Senate did today, and that follows on the sellout by the House. But we just got a little bit of a pep talk from Caroline Fredrickson at the ACLU. She's not giving up. And here comes Bob Edgar. He's president of Common Cause, a former congressman, former head of the United Council, American Church Council. What was that called, Bob?
National Council of Churches.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I don't have a full bio in front of me. And Common Cause took out a full-page ad in the New York Times today. And in an unusual move, you fly the American flag upside down. What's that mean, Bob?
Well, there's a public law 829, that states that any American flag that is flown upside down is a signal of distress, and we think democracy is in distress, not only because of executive branch abuses of government in the White House, but also the failure of Congress to stand up for what is right. And today's activity around the FISA bill, I think, demonstrates that Congress has not shown the courage that it needs to protect civil liberties, civil rights, human rights, and we hope that citizens will stand up and speak out. We put a pledge in the New York Times today calling upon people to share this pledge with their candidates who are running for public office so that in the next Congress and with the next president, we'll have elected officials who will work to end torture and respect human rights and respect the rule of law generally.
And you have a website at recapturetheflag.com. That's recapturetheflag.com. And you're inviting people to log on there and sign on to your petition.
Oh, that's correct. We're trying to get thousands and thousands of people, Democrats, independents, Republicans, to join together and say, let's rebalance the federal government. Let's get the executive branch respecting the rule of law. Let's restore our international prestige. I think it's time to restore the core values of American democracy, and we've been a beacon of hope in a troubled world. We stood for freedom from tyranny and respect for individual liberties and human rights, and we've eroded that over the last 8 years, and it's just time to take it back. And the Common Cause has been committed for the last 38 years to doing what's right, starting back trying to end the Vietnam War and working on abuses such as Watergate. And now with the abuses of power that we've seen over the course of this last period, we just think it's time to take back power and hold power accountable.
And Bob Edgar, why is it that leaders of both parties don't seem to believe that embracing the Constitution and the rule of law is good politics and could benefit them in the elections this November?
Well, I think we've seen a hint of it in the presidential campaign that people are looking for change, they're looking for hope, they're looking for an adjustment in our policies. Even Senator McCain is separating himself to some degree from the current administration. And I think Senator Clinton and Senator Obama have clearly stated that we need to turn course away from a foreign policy based on preemptive war and torture to a foreign policy based on diplomacy and the rule of law. And domestically, I think people feel troubled when they see torture in places like Abu Ghraib and the problems we've seen with the Guantanamo prison camp. We just have moved so far away from the basic tenets of the Constitution that people want to pull that back. And I think politicians are going to suffer if they fail to pick up on this melody that's playing across the country to restore basic common sense and the rule of law.
Well, I certainly agree, and, you know, this is the time for people to redouble their efforts to change the composition, not the regime, just the composition of the House and the Senate, and bring more progressive and change-oriented voices into the political mix, because I think many people were lulled into some complacency and have been pretty disappointed by Barack Obama's move here. And my take on that is that we need to send real progressives to the House and the Senate and not simply rely on one man in the White House to change everything.
Well, I think we not only have to recapture the flag, we have to recapture democracy. And we think democracy is really in distress. And we would hope that Senator Obama and Senator McCain would chart a course that was different than the previous 8 years. And we would hope that Democrats and Republicans who get elected to the House and Senate reread the Constitution, recognize the power of Congress, particularly the power of being able to control the purse, the money strings.
Bob Edgar, my time is up. Thank you very much. I want people to go to recaptureTheFlag.com. Sign the petition.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Not again. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It is so frustrating. Just as the price of oil was falling, Iran decides it's time to test long-range missiles powerful enough to hit Israel. Boom! Price of oil starts creeping back up. And you have CBS's foreign affairs consultant, Pamela Falk, warning of possible catastrophe.
There could be an accidental confrontation in the Persian Gulf, and then the U.S., Iran, and Israel are engaged in military confrontation.
Well, that's just great. Must countries still be talking about firing missiles at each other? You know, there was another story about Iran today, about how much stuff the U.S. exports to Iran. The story was clearly intended to raise questions about whether it makes sense to trade with a country that's probably making nukes. But look at it from the other side. If Iran really hates us, if they really believe that stuff about the great Satan, why are they importing American Frigidaires? Why are they importing American cigarettes? It's because they want them, that's why. They want American products. You know what that means? It means they're like every other nation on Earth. Well, I tell the Iranians, these test firings of missiles are so USSR. Yes, we know the day's coming when every nation will be able to destroy every other nation, but the day is also coming when we will all be trading partners. In which case, what's the point of your missiles? What's the point of annihilating your trading partners? All it would mean is that instead of getting good refrigerators, you'd have crappy refrigerators. Just cut it out. Now this.
As the price of gas continues to rise, so does the number of fuel-saving experts. Look, the guys at Advanced Auto Parts aren't scientists inventing hydrogen engines or cellulosic ethanol. They got their PhDs in parts. Stuff like air filters, spark plugs, fuel system cleaners, and other things that make cars run more efficiently. Look, if you really want to save money on gas, go buy a bike. Otherwise, head on over to Advanced Auto Parts. They'll show you how to get more miles per gallon. Whatever you're working on, Advanced will help you keep the wheels turning.
This is Dave Ross, out on the CBS Radio Network.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Yes, this is the America where you can huddle in your home and feel safe because the government has intercepted your phone calls and your emails. Don't you feel safe? And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on shortly. We expect to be joined by Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. Update on the firefighting and also the budget battle in Sacramento. He's delayed by a briefing, but we do expect to hear from him before the end of this half hour. And next hour, my antidote to being bummed out about the Senate action on the FISA bill today. Rick Shankman, a journalist and author, has written, "Just How Stupid Are We?" And he'll be here for the entire third hour of the program, and we welcome your calls about that. Lines open for you right now if you'd like to join me. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. And it says here on my screen that line three is Daniel Sheehan. Is this Dan Sheehan of the Christic Institute?
Yes, this is he.
Wow. Dan, it's great to hear from you. I talked to you back in the early 90s about your work exposing the atrocities in Central and South America in the 1980s. And you'll be curious to know that I later did some work with some folks at the Quixote Center.
Oh, right, right. Dolly and Bill Callahan.
And Maureen Fiedler.
And Maureen Fiedler, yeah.
She hosts a public radio show now called Interfaith Voices that I helped her launch.
Yep.
And the one other thing is I got wind that you were living in San Rafael a couple of years ago.
Well, we were up there when we were doing the State of the World Forum with Gorbachev.
Okay.
Up until the 9/11 incident in 2001,
mm-hmm.
when we were all attempting to try to identify a new kind of post-Cold War global organizing principle that was other than, you know, the dialectic of war,
mm-hmm.
which has kind of gotten pushed aside by the Bush administration.
Yeah.
But in the interim, what I did is I was calling because of when you had the conversation earlier with Caroline, that, you know, I was chief counsel in the Karen Silkwood case earlier.
That's
before
right.
the whole Iran-Contra incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And we secured that people needn't be cowed by an act of Congress like this, because an act of Congress like this can be declared unconstitutional. And the fact of the matter is, an action like this in which Congress attempts to pass a statute which deprives a whole block of citizens of their common law right to access to the courts
mm-hmm.
to recover for a tort claim has been declared unconstitutional in the Karen Silkwood case. That's exactly how we, in the case we won, it stopped the construction of all nuclear power stations in the country since June of 1979, because the Congress had passed a thing called the Price-Anderson Act, which was an attempt to deprive citizens of the right to engage in a common law tort claim for any more than $10 million mm-hmm. against a private nuclear facility. and it was declared unconstitutional by the court in Silkwood, and it was sustained by the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals. So there's a very specific precedent for this, and it's the only case where it's been done, but it was a specific court order sustained by the federal courts declaring unconstitutional attempt on the part of Congress to, through the enactment of a particular statute, mm-hmm. to deprive citizens of a common law tort claim right of access to the courts.
Well, I hear that, and I take some solace in it, because yeah. we have seen the Roberts Court four times now push back on the Bush administration's power grabs mm-hmm. and reassert habeas corpus and other fundamental rights. But I'm a little concerned that this is so politicized, and with the rubber stamp of House and Senate approval, my concern is that the Roberts Court will defer to the other two branches on this.
Well, it's an interesting question here, because that what we have here is, now there's even more reason to be concerned, perhaps, because of the latest ruling of the Supreme Court here in June, where they just simply kind of sui sponte shot down the entire right to punitive damages for anything in the Exxon Valdez case.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that way of waging in and just all of a sudden wiping out an entire category of common law tort recovery for citizens is not a good sign.
And these are the guys who talked about stare decisis and promised
right.
to respect precedent,
no, no.
Daniel.
Right. No, we have no doubt. I mean, and even Larry Tribe, who for years, he was my con law professor at Harvard Law School, he held out for years trying to pretend that, you know, one didn't have to accuse a court of being just rampantly political. But, you know, after, you know, he was one of the legal counsel in the Bush v. Gore, Gore v. Bush operation mm-hmm. Over the election in 2000, and it's now transparent even to him that this is a completely politicized court. And the question is which side of the political war this court's going to come out on. And as you say, there have been some exceptions pursuant to which they have even themselves come forward and said, no, this is overreaching, this is going too far. So the question is whether or not they're going to do that in this case. Now, the key question on this, and I don't want to get too technical about it, but the question is whether or not a person has a fundamental Fourth Amendment right of privacy, which is enforceable against private parties.
Mm-hmm.
Because the conservatives, the extreme conservatives, in the kind of strict constructionists, take a position that the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution identifies a right which exists only over and against government. That the constitutional provision in the crafting of our government was set up to restrict the grant of a power to the government itself to move in to try to violate this right. But by definition, that implies that this is a fundamental right the citizens have, and that we argued in the Silkwood case, because you remember, in addition to the contamination in the Silkwood case, which ended up declaring unconstitutional the Price-Anderson Act, there was also the count of them killing Karen on the highway
right.
and wiretapping her telephones mm-hmm. and putting electronic eavesdropping devices in her home. There was an entire provision in that the count one in that case was in fact a right of privacy claim. And it was over and against the private nuclear corporation, the Kerr-McGee Nuclear Corporation, mm-hmm. that had an inside private security operation run by Jim Reading. And they're the ones that wiretapped Silkwood, bugged her telephones, and then followed her on the highways. And what we did is we filed a claim saying that we had a right to recover a private cause of action against private parties who electronically eavesdropped on you illegally.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the court, in order to try to avoid ruling on that, declared that the Federal Civil Rights Act protects only black people.
Mm-hmm.
They argued that the Federal Civil Rights Act, since it was passed in 1868, immediately following the end of the Civil War, and they made a judicial finding that the Civil War was fought solely for the purpose of freeing the black race from slavery,
mm-hmm.
that therefore the Federal Civil Rights Act must have been intended to exclusively protect people of the African American heritage.
Mm-hmm. Daniel,
that was overturned by the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals. So
Daniel, I'm going to have to stop here because the lieutenant governor's on the line, and
you
I'm going to jump to him in a moment.
You
but
take him.
Number one, I want to thank you for calling in with these comments today.
Yeah.
And number two, I'm going to put you back on hold and ask you to leave your number with Katrina because I'd like to reconnect with you and invite you on the show, and,
yeah.
and we can talk about things at greater length.
Oh, terrific.
Daniel Sheehan, thank you very much. So hold on. Katrina, can you get his number for me, please? And we are joined now by California's Lieutenant Governor, John Garamendi, who just broke away from a meeting to join us. John, how are you today?
Peter, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
It's good to talk with you. And first up, let's recap the fire situation around the state, because we are making some progress. The Big Sur fire that many of my listeners are concerned about is, what, up to about 23% containment. That's progress.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have been permitted to return to their homes. The evacuation orders have been canceled in some areas. So that's kind of the bright spot. What's the overview statewide right now, John?
Well, the overview is that we're a whole lot better off overall than we were a week ago. Many of the fires are out. There are several very big ones that are currently burning. The Big Sur, fortunately, is moving away from the coast and the populated areas back into the wilderness area. Santa Barbara is always of concern. Anytime there's a fire in the Santa Barbara area, it is a major, major concern because of the nature of the terrain and the brush and where the homes are, the wildland interface. That one, however, seems to be moving away from, is in fact moving away from the populated areas back into the more remote regions where there are far fewer homes. Butte County is a major problem up in the Chico area.
Yeah.
I was just informed, my wife is the assistant general manager at Cal Expo, and apparently she just phoned and said, hey, we got a couple hundred or maybe more evacuees arriving here at the state fairgrounds in Sacramento as we speak. So,
Well, I do know that the Butte fire jumped last night and destroyed 40 homes, and that actually doubles the count. We were remarkably lucky that despite 1,700 total fires breaking out, only 40 houses had been lost and about an equivalent number of other structures.
Well, that speaks to the extraordinary work done by the firefighters, state, local, federal, and now the National Guard, all involved in and, you know, really protecting these homes. Also, it speaks to, I think, the individuals finally getting the message that they need to protect themselves by providing this defensible space around their homes and making their homes fire safe.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the combination here of that.
And John, I took your advice. I did the video inventory over the holiday weekend.
Let's talk about that, because perhaps some of your listeners are not there. We talked about this. This is how to protect yourself and how to deal with insurance issues, right? So what did you do, Peter?
I took my video camera, and I went in every room of the house, and I looked at the valuable items. We shot them, and I provided some commentary about how old they were and what I thought the replacement value was.
There you go. There you go. Everybody ought to do that. And then, Peter, did you prepare for an evacuation? Step two, Peter.
A little bit.
Step two. What if you had to evacuate, what would you take? Well,
just a handful of items. I'd get the hell out of there, John.
Well, no. What's going to happen, Peter, is you haven't thought it through, and you need to think it through. You need to sit down with the wife or and say, if we had to evacuate, what would we take? And she'd probably say, I'd take everything except you. But you need to think it through, because when that evacuation order comes, everybody's mind becomes befuddled.
Yeah.
And you go to the evacuation center, you ask people what they took, and they said, I had no idea why I picked that up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. So you think about it ahead of time. Is it the family album, the wedding book, jewelry? You should take important documents that are critical to your future, passports, things of this sort.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know where they are, and you want to make up a little list, actually write it down, because we've seen tens of thousands of people all across the state in mandatory emergency evacuations.
Yeah. And that's been a touchy issue at Big Sur, where many people wanted to stay to defend their homes. Some people did, and they were limited in their mobility once they stayed behind. I understand the tension between the firefighters and the authorities there to try to protect people and their desire to protect their own properties, but that can create some difficult decisions.
It does. My recommendation, based upon years and years of involvement in this, is that follow the order. First of all, you may, and there's certain circumstances you could get arrested, but you don't want to go that far. What happens, and I think this is part of, in fact, I'm almost sure that four firefighters died down in Riverside County when they went to an individual's home who refused to evacuate.
Mm.
And those kinds of tragedies can occur because you not only put your own life at risk by refusing to evacuate, but you also put the firefighter's life at risk. And I can cite numerous instances where a life can never be replaced.
Yeah.
But the home and the belongings can't.
A quick recap, Napa and Solano, the wildfire 100% contained. Lake County, Walker Fire 100% contained. Mariposa, Oliver Fire 100% contained. In Modoc County, the Corral Fire 100% contained. That's all good news. In Humboldt, the complex fire there 85% contained. Shasta and Trinity 45% contained. Mendocino, the Lightning Complex, they're describing that at 60% contained. And Butte County, currently described at 40% contained after that flare-up overnight. You can get more details at fire.ca.gov. We'll take a break and return with Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. We'll talk about the budget battle underway in Sacramento. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA. Couple of crashes out there. Monterey, first of all, Highway 68 at York Road. Two cars, they've pulled into the bus pullout off to the side. CHP is on the scene taking a report. For Carmel, southbound 1 just before Carpenter Street, three-car crash. All the activity in the center divide. CHP also on the scene there. Look for heavy traffic as you approach the scene. Northbound 17 after Idlewild Drive, three-car crash cleared to the shoulder and has you backed up from about Big Moody Curve and, of course, some heavy traffic once you get to the Fish Hook in Santa Cruz. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to cars that are wrecked in Monterey? Well, about half the cars are salvaged, get fixed up and resold. Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socolo is the place to go. Socolo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socolo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socolo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, the heat wave. throughout California is straining our air conditioning here. During the commercial breaks, we turn on our second unit, the Arctic Blaster, and manage to get the studio temperature down here to 80 degrees right now. And John Garamendi, California Lieutenant Governor, what's the state of the power grid with this heat wave that we're experiencing? Do you know?
The last I heard, which is earlier in the afternoon, is that we are approaching the marginal area. People are asked to turn up their air conditioners to 80 mm-hmm. or 78 or 76.
I'm in compliance.
You're compliant. You're doing a good job, Peter. And to turn off unnecessary electrical circuits that are not necessary. It hasn't become a mandatory thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get this kind of temperature, in this case the third consecutive day, and more tomorrow and the next day, we'll be near the margin. But the very important thing to understand about the power grid is it's that last 2%. And that's the 2% that we can save.
Mm-hmm.
And so by simply increasing the temperature in your home by a few degrees, by not cooling every room, that's particularly those rooms that are not being used, and in factories and in places. For example, I shut my irrigation pumps off. I have a ranch, and we're irrigating. I irrigate at night, not during the day now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So those are things that save that last 2%. That's where we break down.
And I'm letting the dishes pile up. I'll just let you know.
There you go. You know, let them pile up, and when it's completely full, then you can turn the dishwasher on, but do it at night, not the day.
John Laird of Santa Cruz of Monterey is the chair of the Assembly Budget Committee, and I received a statement from him today with the Democratic proposal for dealing with the huge shortfall in revenues in Sacramento. Let me tick it off briefly here, then we'll talk about it, John.
Sure.
The proposal would restore $1.8 billion in health and human services that the governor cut, and it would provide a billion and a half more for education than the governor suggests, restore $57 million in financial assistance for college students, reduce corrections by $300 million with some reduction in the prison population, reinstate tax brackets on the wealthiest Californians, and that would generate $5.6 billion, close a corporate tax loophole generating a billion one, suspend a tax adjustment for upper income Californians, $815 million, another $200 million from rolling back a tax loophole for upper income Californians, and restoring the franchise tax, which would generate almost half a billion, and it could be three times that much if it's properly enforced. So these are the measures that are on the table by the Democrats, and the only thing I've heard so far is that Republicans are considering a fee that would be added to our property insurance bills, and I don't remember what it's for.
It's for firefighting.
Okay, firefighting. How about that?
Which is an appropriate time to be discussing that.
Yeah.
This is really an absolutely critical step that the Democrats have put forward, which is a rational way of solving a horrendous problem here in California, which is the structural deficit and the cuts that would result from either the governor's proposal or what the Republicans have proposed. We have to do a balanced approach. And Peter, there is a long history in California of various budget crises. Ronald Reagan, that most conservative of governors, faced it twice when he was governor, Pete Wilson once, Duke Majan once, and Gray Davis. In every case, when faced with a budget crisis, those governors did three things. They sought reform, as in the prison reform issue that was discussed a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
They sought cuts, making cuts in the low-priority programs, and they raised taxes. Ronald Reagan did it twice. Duke Majan did it once. And Pete Wilson did it once.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is not a new problem in California, and frankly, the solution is found in the history of California. All that needs to be done here is to follow the pattern of three conservative governors, Reagan, Duke Majan, and Pete Wilson. And
now that Arnold is a lame duck, do you think that he will have the courage to take on his own party? Because after all, that's the issue here. Democrats will vote to raise taxes, but they need at least a couple of Republican votes in the Senate and a handful in the Assembly. And without the governor's support, that may not happen.
Well, and frankly, you need two other things. You need to offer something to the conservative side of the coin. You need to offer the reform. And that has to be on the table, and you also have to offer some cuts. And there are places that cuts can take place without great harm. Obviously, there'll be certain constituencies that won't be happy, but, you know, life can go on, and then later, and when the economy returns, you can restore those cuts. But, that's the essence of a compromise, and yes, the governor's in a position to say, okay, now it's on the table. You put the taxes on the table. I've got cuts on the table. Let's talk a little bit about reform, and then let's get this thing done. You know, everybody has their own ideas about which tax to raise or to reduce. I've got a list that would be somewhat different than this, but nonetheless, we need to have the revenue, because you're looking at some very, very serious things. If you took just a $500 million cut, what does a $500 million cut? Well, for the University of California, 25,000 students are supported by that $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the full annual salary for 7,500 elementary school teachers. Or it's schooling for 57,000 K-12 students, 100,000 special education, $500,000. This is what $500 million will do. $500 million will provide funding for 19,000 elderly people on Medi-Cal in a nursing home, or 500 miles of much-needed levee repair.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about real issues. When you talk about making cuts or not providing the revenue, which means you're going to have to cut, then these are the kind of things that the money would buy, or you wouldn't do it if you didn't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very, very important thing that we're dealing with here, and the Democrats appropriately put the issue of taxes on the table.
And John Garamendi, what's the pool say? When we'll have a budget? October?
No, I've always said that you can never have a budget until you have five consecutive days over 100 degrees in Sacramento. Otherwise, it's not properly cooked.
Touche. Thank you, John Garamendi.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Talk to you again soon. That's our Democratic Lieutenant Governor. I'm Peter B. Collins. Journalist and writer Rick Schenkman joins us next, and he asks, just how stupid are we?
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. For the first time since he was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor, Senator Ted Kennedy was back on Capitol Hill this afternoon. He was greeted with applause, handshakes, and hugs as he arrived in the Senate to cast a vote on the Medicare bill, which fell one vote short the last time it came up. This time, as CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports, was different.
Under intense pressure from doctors and seniors groups, a substantial number of Republicans broke away from President Bush and joined Democrats to pass the bill to halt a 10% cut in payments to doctors and hospitals for treating Medicare patients. President Bush has threatened a veto because it takes money to pay for it from one of his pet programs, Medicare Advantage by private insurance companies. But the overwhelming vote in Congress may lead him to reconsider.
Kennedy flew to Washington after his daily treatment at Massachusetts General Hospital. As he cast his vote, his wife Vicki and niece Caroline watched from the Senate gallery, Vicki Kennedy wiping away tears. President Bush says he's ready to sign the terrorist surveillance bill passed in the Senate today.
This bill gives our intelligence operators and law enforcement officials the tools they need to conduct surveillance on foreign terrorists in foreign countries.
Missouri Republican Kit Bond says it's the right balance to protect civil liberties without handcuffing our intelligence professionals. But Vermont Democrat Patrick Leahy, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, refused to support the bill.
We're telling Americans, law-abiding, honest, good, hard-working Americans,
They were closing the courthouse door in your face because we have to protect the president and those around him.
The DA in Boulder, Colorado, has sent a letter to John Ramsey saying he, his late wife, and their son are no longer under suspicion in the death of six-year-old JonBenet. CBS News correspondent Lee Frank reports.
JonBenet's family has been under what a former district attorney called an umbrella of suspicion. But now District Attorney Mary Lacey apologizes for public perception that the Ramseys might have been involved in the 1996 murder. A new DNA testing method matches DNA on two separate pieces of the little girl's clothing, DNA pointing to an unidentified male suspect.
Attorney Lynn Wood, who represents John Ramsey, was interviewed on the CBS Evening News.
John was, I would describe him as being extremely grateful for the fact that the investigation is still underway to find the killer of his daughter.
Patsy Ramsey died of ovarian cancer 2 years ago. Sky-high fuel prices have forced many airlines to take drastic measures. Northwest is the latest.
We have targeted a personnel reduction of about 2,500 employees that will impact all employee groups at Northwest Airlines and be spread across the network.
Spokeswoman Tammy Lee says they're adding fees and a $15 charge for the first checked bag. The price of oil held steady today, but the stock market dropped. The Dow Industrial's down 236 points. This is CBS News.
A message from the Orbitz Traveler Wellness Center.
Hi, this is Dr. Martin Pakulski-Blatz. Am I here to tell you that there's no reason to worry about the price of your flight dropping after you book? Yes. With Orbitz Price Assurance, if another customer books the same flight for less, will Orbitz automatically send you the difference in cash? Also, yes. Is this the best news you've ever heard? I don't even know you, but yes.
Visit Orbitz.com today. Same flight means same dates, times, airlines, restrictions, $250 maximum refund.
Attention RV owners, you might want to pull your vehicle over because I'm about to blow your mind. Ready? GEICO now insures all types of RVs like motorized, sport utility, towable RVs, motorhomes, trailers and pop-ups. And if there was an RV that levitated and ran on fish and chips, they'd probably insure that too. So see how much money you could save with GEICO. Oi, where you headed anyway? I hope it's a water park. I love those.
Now GEICO offers insurance on all the stuff that moves you, including RVs. Call 1-800-947-AUTO or visit GEICO.com.
Seems everybody's looking for ways to cut back these days. At one Florida jail, cutbacks are hitting inmates right in the stomach. CBS News correspondent Peter King has the story.
No more fresh eggs, cornbread, or fresh milk for Polk County, Florida inmates. They'll get frozen egg patties, one piece of bread instead of two, and powdered milk instead of the real thing for breakfast. Soon to be gone, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, chocolate milk, coffee and juice, and already gone, cornbread. Inmates are getting crackers instead. The sheriff says he can save $200,000 a year with these changes, and if inmates want the good stuff, he says, they need to behave and stay out of jail. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Overwork is an officially recognized health problem in Japan. Now the government has ruled that a top Toyota engineer literally died from working too hard. That makes the family eligible for insurance benefits. He was only 45. Before his death, he averaged 80 hours of overtime a month supervising development of a hybrid Camry. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
A message from the Orbitz Traveler Wellness Center.
Hi, this is Dr. Martin Pakulski-Blatz. Am I here to tell you that there's no reason to worry about the price of your flight dropping after you book? Yes. With Orbitz Price Assurance, if another customer books the same flight for less, will Orbitz automatically send you the difference in cash? Also, yes. Is this the best news you've ever heard? I don't even know you, but yes.
Visit Orbitz.com today. Same flight means same dates, times, airlines, restrictions, $250 maximum refund.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Instead of paying more for car insurance, you'd rather pay less. Call you crazy, but for some strange reason, you like saving money. And guess what? With things like money-saving rates, multi-car discounts, and good driver discounts, GEICO's always looking for ways to lower what you pay for great car insurance. Huh. Guess you can call us crazy, too.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course, it's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from the dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
The question of the moment, just how stupid are we?
Much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you.
Rick Schenkman joins me this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's an award-winning investigative reporter, and he's worked in television news, he's taught journalism, and his new book, subtitled Facing the Truth About the American Voter, is titled Just How Stupid Are We? Leading with an insult, Rick, that's a great way to sell books.
Well, my publisher was worried about the title, but I said, you know, I think that there's a 10-alarm fire going on in this country, and we're ignoring it, and if I just put the title on the book of saying something like, you know, the American people don't know enough to be good voters or good citizens, that doesn't begin to approach the kind of angst that I have and the passion that I bring to the subject. And I thought, no, let's put it out there. Let's put out a really racy title. Now, I want to make it very clear right off the top. I don't argue that the American people are stupid. Mm-hmm. I think it would be stupid to make that argument, as stupid as the argument politicians make when they say the American people are smart. You cannot characterize 300 million people with a quip like that. But I do think that you can say that our politics are often stupid. They're often insultingly stupid.
Yeah.
And that's because millions of voters are inattentive. They are grossly ignorant of the way our government works, of politics, of what's going on in the world, and that is something that we need to pay attention to.
Well, Rick, I share this issue and your concern about it, and I have talked about it many times. My listeners may feel blue in the face from hearing it, but I believe we have serious problems with our political system. I think we have serious problems with our media, and that those two often either collude or their interests overlap in a way that we lose out. But we cannot escape that consumers and voters in this country have choices, and they make choices that are really hard to understand and hard to explain all too often.
Yeah, you know, the very first page of the book says it's easy to blame our problems on Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney, or to blame our problems on the media, but after 7-8 years of it, to be honest with you, I just find it kind of tedious. And it's the same story over and over again. It's like watching a bad movie. It always ends the same way. And I finally said, you know, we have to take this to the people. This is a democracy now, in a way it never was intended to be 200 years ago, in a way it wasn't even a half a century ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're a much, much more democratic country. People really are in charge of the destiny of the country. And you get the government you deserve. So the question facing us now is, why did we deserve George W. Bush?
Do you have an answer?
I do. And it's that people just don't pay attention. Let me throw some statistics at you, which is really what got me finally the tipping point to write this book. On the eve of the Iraq War in March of 2003, 60% of the American people believed that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11.
Yeah.
This despite the absence of any evidence for it. And 80% of the people who were in favor of the war said they were in favor of the war because, to a great extent, they believed Saddam had something to do with 9/11. Now, how can you run a democracy that way? And it gets even worse. A year later, the 9/11 Commission came out with their big report, and they said no link between Saddam and 9/11. And still, 50% of the American people believe that there was a link. I don't know how you can run a democracy that way. Thomas Jefferson said that freedom and ignorance never have gone together, never will go together, and yet we seem to blithely believe that somehow it will all work out okay. And I just think that we've got this fire going here. You know, Barack Obama is going around the country and he's saying that we need to have Democrats and Republicans get along better. Our politics are too ugly. If he really wants to tackle a democratic issue, in other words, an issue related to how our democracy performs or doesn't perform, here's one for him. This is the big one, and this is much more important than whether or not Trent Lott and Harry Reid can sit down together and have a cup of coffee and not go at it. This is at the root of why our politics are so stupid. Ignorant voters are sitting ducks for wily and manipulative politicians. The reason our politics are so stupid is the politicians know that they can count on voters not paying attention, so therefore they figure they can get away with murder, and they do.
Well, and my Exhibit A right now, Rick Shankman, I'm still bruised over this. This week, the United States Senate finished the work of caving in that the House started a couple of weeks ago on the president's demand for incredible wiretapping authority, and they have legalized the lawbreaking of the last 6 years. This wiretapping started before 9/11, and routinely, members of the Senate trotted up to that microphone for the debate this week and said, well, this was a response to 9/11 to protect us. And just like the canard that Saddam was connected to 9/11, the idea that this wiretapping started after 9/11 is one of the most important issues that is being covered up by this action. Now, on top of that, the media is not covering this to a great extent. The blogosphere is. A lot of active progressives are concerned about this issue. But the example I offer is that on Tuesday night, the day that the Senate began its debate over FISA, and the night before the scheduled vote, the PBS NewsHour offered not one word of coverage about this important rollback in our Fourth Amendment rights. This is, to me, one of the most critical issues of my lifetime, and you've got to scour the dial to find any televised coverage of it.
Well, now you're talking about PBS NewsHour. Already you're talking about an elite audience watching that show. I mean, let's talk about the network shows. I mean, they're the ones who have the large audience of 20 million people between the three of them. And, of course, my guess is they didn't have any news stories. And I've been on the road promoting the book, so I haven't been watching network news this week. But, you know, look, why do they do stories about Keiko the whale? And why do they do, you know, all these human interest stories? So
I've got a late breaking for you.
Yeah?
The Ramses have been cleared. Really, the parents didn't kill JonBenet. That's the big story breaking. And we're going to have to suffer through this for days now.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's going to displace A-Rod and Madonna.
Yeah, it's terrible. Look, you know, why do we talk about these human interest stories? Because you don't have to know anything to have an opinion about them. If we're going to start talking about issues, well, then, first of all, you have to count on the public actually being a little bit attentive and not switching the dial because the conversation became a little boring or because the conversation actually required them to sit there and concentrate. But in addition to that, you know, it's just a simple matter of people don't know enough. If you put me in a physics class, I'm terrible at math. You put me in a physics class and the teacher's rattling on about physics, you know what? I'm going to be bored and it's all going to go over my head. I'm going to start, you know, doodling in a comic book or something because I wouldn't be able to follow the discussion. Well, the American people cannot follow the simplest public debates. Let me give you an example.
Because they're incapable or not interested.
No, they're certainly capable.
They're not morons. They just don't care.
Sure. Anybody with an IQ of 100 can follow politics if you have a sufficient background. So, for instance, here's some statistics that just curl your hair. Only 2 out of 5 Americans know we have 3 branches of government and can name them. Now, how can you run a democracy that way?
Did you ask Cheney? Because he thinks there are 4.
Yeah, well, he's the fourth branch. Only 1 in 7 Americans can find Iraq on a map. This is 15 years after we started bombing that country, 5 years into the second war in Iraq. You'd think at some point in the course of a 15-year engagement with that country, where we're killing people, we're turning them into refugees, our oil prices are dependent on what's going on over in that country, still, most Americans, a majority, are not paying any attention.
And not only that, Rick, what we saw a week ago is that the substitute for any debate about Iraq policy and what we're going to do about it was reduced to, Wes Clark questioned John McCain's fitness to be president, and it was based on a very poor response to a question that was fed to him by Bob Schieffer. And yet that ends up being substituted for any kind of meaningful debate about the most important issue of this campaign.
Sure, you can't have a meaningful debate because to have a meaningful debate, you actually have to get into substance and people shy away from it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the background, the substance flies over your head, you get bored by it, you want to turn the channel, and so that's what they wind up doing.
Don't turn the channel. Rick Shankman is here this entire hour. His book is called
Just how stupid are we? Your calls and comments are welcome here. Lines open at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. First up, Dave in Eureka. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Peter. And, well, you know, to me, stupid is not the word. Misled, yes. Deceived, yes. Being taken down the rosy path, yes.
But Dave, that's the language of victimology. So the American people are victims of a pernicious media and an ugly government?
No, you took the words right out of my mouth there, Peter. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. I think that we are on a regular basis being misled by both the media and by the neocons who have their own exploitive agenda that they can't be honest about for even a moment.
You know, it's just so frustrating when I hear you say that, because democracy presupposes that people are bright enough and endowed by their creator with enough good common sense that they can govern themselves. Now, if you don't believe that and you think that they can be so easily misled, then we ought to give up on democracy. Move to Russia then. Being a citizen in a democracy means that you have to assume certain responsibilities, and among those are the responsibility to find out what the hell is going on. Now, as I cited with the 9/11 Commission, it wasn't hard to find out what was going on. It was, the truth was plastered on the front page of every paper in this country. All the networks carried it. Saddam Hussein wasn't part of 9/11.
But Dick Cheney said he was.
Well, if people are going to be misled by Dick Cheney and by George W. Bush.
But he told it to Tim Russert, and Tim's a saint now.
Then they ought to turn in their voting cards, because they can't be trusted with power. I mean, seriously, the truth was not, this was not as if the all government leaders were lying to us, and like with the Pentagon Papers, not until somebody leaked the truth to us did we find out what was going on. No, the truth was spread out in front of us on the front pages of the papers, and people didn't take the time to read it or absorb it. Now, to me, that's appalling.
All right, we're going to take a break. Dave, thank you for your comment. More calls coming up, so join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Rick Shankman offering you a literary poke in the eye. Just how stupid are we facing the truth about the American voter? We'll continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Most mattress companies equate comfort with padding. That's why they stuff their mattresses full of polyfiber and cheap foam. But fibers break down, padding gets lumpy, and that doesn't spell comfort. The mattresses at SC41 Furniture rely on a far better design. We start with a base of 1,240 pre-compressed, motion-sensitive inner spring coils. Over that, we add a layer of highly resilient natural latex. And we finish it with a soft and stretchy cotton cover lined with pure natural wool. The result is unparalleled comfort, coupled with highly responsive support. And if that's not comfy enough, our double coil mattress adds a second layer of 1,500 microcoils for a total of 2,740 inner springs. That's almost three times more than a comparable U.S. mattress. For a better mattress design, come to SC41 Furniture on 41st Avenue, right off Highway 1, across from the Home Depot in Santa Cruz. On the web at sc41.com.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
The staff and management of Natura Vita welcome all to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas. Learn firsthand about traditional and modern natural health products and practices while enjoying delicious and healthy food in a fun, clean, and family-friendly atmosphere. Smoothies, anyone? Come to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant, conveniently located at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and looks like most of our earlier problems have cleared out. We have a crash Morgan Hill, Edmondson Avenue at Loma Alta Court. Two cars apparently blocking the roadway, and you do have paramedics responding to the scene. Earlier crash, Highway 1 at Carpenter Street, Carmel, with two cars. That's been moved off to surface streets by the CHP. You may see some heavy traffic as you approach the scene. Highway 1 at Dolan Road, we had reports of a box of lettuce that was dropped in the lanes. CHP is going to run a traffic break to get that moved out of your way. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains, currently checking and stalling accident-free. Usual slowing once you get to the fish hook in Santa Cruz with stop-and-go traffic southbound 1 making your way down into Aptos. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb? Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem, call it in 415-901-7990. Nate Nix, that's traffic, KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
Writer Rick Shankman with me.
They are endowed by their creator.
What is the source of the lyrics of this song, Rick?
This is a back question. We hold these truths. All men are created equal. Declaration of Independence, the great foundation myth of America.
Yeah. Well, to your earlier point about how little Americans know, 3 years ago, this week, we took over a radio station in Monterey, KRXA 540. And before we launched the new talk format, we were tuning up the transmitter and building a studio and things like that. So we put this on as a continuous loop, played it 10 times an hour, just to kind of get people's attention and let them know that something different was coming. And we got calls and emails saying, what is that radical screed? What is that communist lingo that those people are singing over and over again on this American radio station? They didn't get it, Rick. Yeah. They didn't know that that was the Declaration of Independence.
Sure. Well, I've got a statistic in the book. You know, more people can name the members of the Simpsons cartoon family than can name more than one of the rights in the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights. So,
well, that's easy. Bart, yeah, Lisa.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just sad. It's just sad. You know, look, this is supposed to be a democracy. We're more democratic than ever before. I know some people find that hard to swallow, but compares, you know, I take a historian's long-term perspective. You know, you go back a century ago when senators really were in the hip pocket of special interests, literally taking bribes before they went out on the Senate floor to vote. And today, where you have women voting and blacks voting and Hispanics voting, you have the pulse of the public being taken almost hourly through polling, and the politicians live in dread fear of acting in opposition to the findings of the pollsters.
Mm-hmm.
We have a primary system now. It's not party bosses picking the party nominees, but it's actually the American people. We've got initiatives and referendums, which you're familiar with in this state, of course. So it's really a very democratic country now. And yet, the people aren't taking responsibility for it. And this is very distressing. It is a 10-alarm fire that we need to be talking about. And that's the biggest thing we're not talking about. And why aren't we talking about it? We're not talking about it because Democrats naturally are loath to talk about the problems with the people. Because the history of the party going all the way back to Andrew Jackson was about celebrating the common people.
Yeah, you got to kiss that collective butt.
You have to pander.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, conservatives, until recently, conservatives always did draw attention to the fact that the voice of the people isn't the voice of God. But beginning in 1980, they stopped. And what happened? Ronald Reagan got elected president. Two things. One thing about Ronald Reagan, he had been an FDR Democrat. He grew up celebrating the common people, and that was one part of his old FDR New Deal background that he didn't give up.
He was president of a labor union.
Yeah, exactly. So he didn't give that up when he became a conservative. So he kept that rhetoric going. Secondly, he kept winning elections, and conservatives started winning elections. Well, if the people are putting you in power, then you're clearly not going to turn around and say, hey, the voice of the people is not the voice of God. Apparently, they're pretty smart. They keep reelecting you. So what happened was we're in this weird period, paradoxically, where at the same time, over the same decades, that the country is getting more and more democratic, nobody is drawing attention to the fact that there are weaknesses in public opinion. People are more powerful than ever before, and yet nobody's willing to say, hey, maybe you got this issue wrong or that issue wrong. We're all populist now. The Democrats are populist, of course. Now the conservatives are populist. The media, they're after ratings, so they're populist. Everybody's a populist.
They're all regular guys clearing brush and driving pickup trucks.
Yeah, well, and the problem is, of course, that the system is out of kilter if you don't have a substantial debate quite frequently about what is wrong with public opinion, and that's what's needed.
In the next segment, I want to take up one of my pet issues, which is sophisticated market research, how it affects the media, and how, in turn, they make decisions about what we should know as opposed to what we need to know. Rick Shankman's new book is Just How Stupid Are We?, subtitled Facing the Truth About the American Voter. Are you a stupid voter? Or do you want to talk about other people you think are stupid? Lines are open. 888-5-PETER-B. The Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Good vibrations.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Are Americans stupid? Do we vote in a way that can be described as stupid? Rick Shankman is with us this hour. His book is called Just How Stupid Are We? And whether you consider yourself really smart or not so smart, let us know what you think about this. Give us a call toll-free. Lines open for you right now at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And if you're listening to our replay on the weekend on Green 960, drop me an email. It's peter at peterbcollins.com.
This ain't no technological breakdown.
Rick Shankman with me here at our secret studio. If you divulge the location, we'll have to send somebody to dispatch you. Okay, Rick? You got that? You did sign the statement, right? Before the break, I mentioned that one of the things I wanted to explore with you is the role of sophisticated market research in manipulating the American people. And we heard from caller Dave a little bit earlier, and he feels victimized by the media and by the politicians who sometimes are able to play it like a Stradivarius. And to me, the enabling technology or software is in market research. And the example I like to offer is those really awful reality TV shows. And I believe that those are a product of market research, and the question that was asked is, what can we put on television that will make your skin crawl, and to the extent that you cannot turn away from it, that you find it so compelling, like a train wreck or, pick your poison, something that you just have to watch. Now, you worked in television news for a few years, and before we went on the air today, you told me about...
20 years.
20 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I've been a historian and also a TV journalist, and I've gone back and forth and back and forth.
Okay.
So, I was in there for a long time.
And you were in management in Seattle at Cairo TV, and you said the market research you did there showed that people love the stories about lost puppies, that people love the human interest stories about somebody who gave a kidney to save somebody else's life. But when it came to the issues of politics and the way our government works, that ranks right at the bottom
of what people respond to.
Yeah, we, when I came on board, we did $1 million study, and it was very distressing. The number one thing people wanted to talk about in the Northwest, and this is not unexpected, was earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
Second, they wanted to know.
I thought we cornered the market on that.
No, we live in fear of earthquakes up in Seattle where I live. Secondly, was weather, and then sports, and way down, literally at the bottom of the list, was politics. So it's very distressing. Let's go into this in a little detail,
mm-hmm.
Because you have an intelligent audience, and I think people might appreciate this. It's a complicated story. So, for instance, you kind of want to blame the news directors across America and say, how come you guys aren't putting on better news? Why are you pandering to people? Well, they're trying to have their ratings, of course, and they want to put on stories that they think the public will find appealing. That's only part of the story. Here's another part of the story that's structural, that doesn't get much attention, but when you're inside the business, you get it. America is divided up into what are called areas of dominant influence. This is the ADI, and if you're in broadcasting, you're very familiar with the term. So that, for instance, at the CBS affiliate that I worked at in Seattle, KIRO-TV, we reached as far north as Vancouver, B.C., mm-hmm. because of cable. We were actually on the Vancouver, B.C. cable system, and as far south as Vancouver, Washington, which is just across the river from Portland, Oregon.
Right.
So if we ran a story about the Seattle mayor, most of our audience could care less about it because we were talking about politics that didn't affect them. And that is one of the big problems that actually local news directors face, which is you have an audience that doesn't match up with political jurisdictions. So if you talk about politics, which the public isn't interested in to begin with, they're really going to just turn away, and they're going to go to the Keiko the Whale story.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't to excuse news directors, but again, I'm trying to place the responsibility on the viewer. If the viewers were smarter about politics, if they paid attention and cared about it, then we'd have more political stories on the air. So really, the TV news that you hate, it's a reflection of where we are as a country.
Well,
I want to live in a country of smart voters. I don't want to shrink our democracy. I want smarter voters, though.
Well, and Rick, this is where we have to assert that the consumers and the voters have responsibilities here. Because the one thing that television stations and networks respond to is low viewership. And if we turn off a program and say, I will not watch this crap, or this is an insulting, pandering, catch-the-predator segment that isn't journalism and is questionable on many, many levels, well, the reason Catch a Predator has been spun off as now a standalone feature on MSNBC is because people watch that.
Yeah.
And it's a sickening case of entrapment on videotape that I think it's an insult to our form of criminal justice. It's an insult to our media and any pretensions of journalism. And yet, it is cheap to produce. They have an endless supply of schlubs who will respond to the emails and show up to try to have sex with an underage girl. And this is a parade that will continue until people turn it off.
Yeah, well, we keep coming back to it. This is the people. Let me pull out a quote from Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin said, "We're all politicians now." He was writing in the 18th century. In the 21st century, nobody says that. We're not all politicians. We are all consumers. In a consumer's republic like the one we have now, people know the price of butter and milk and certainly of a gallon of gas, but they have no idea what the size of the budget deficit is or how large the budget is or how big our economy is. They don't pay attention to that kind of thing. John Dewey, the American philosopher, the great philosopher of the 20th century, in the 1920s, he wrote a wonderful essay in which he said, you know, once we really get going as a consumer society, and we weren't there yet in the 1920s, we were just on the precipice, He said, we're going to have problems with our democracy because there are going to be so many diversions for people's attention that they're not going to pay too much attention anymore to politics. Instead, they're going to wind up going for a ride in the country, listening to the radio, enjoying themselves at the movies. They're going to, in other words, do things that are going to entertain them. And politics, while it certainly can be entertaining, and probably you and I both find it immensely entertaining.
I like it better than sports.
Yeah, well, so do I. I find it very entertaining. But most people don't. For them, it's kind of a drudgery to have to sit and read a long story in the New York Times, for instance, about how the budget works. That's boring to them. Well, this is part of the price we are paying for living in this consumer society. So that's
now, which,
one of the
which
problems.
Point, which part of the Bill of Rights said that I am guaranteed not to be bored?
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a good line.
Brian's on the line from Salinas. Thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show, and you're on the air with Rick Shankman.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Okay, thanks.
All right, so when I listen to you guys so much, I hear you keep promoting democracy over and over and over. But in the studies I've done on the Founding Fathers and things of that nature is we are a republic rather than a democracy. And from what I've taken, from what I've learned from the Federalist Papers and things like that, that our Founding Fathers did most everything they could to keep us from being a democracy. I mean, I have a quote here from James Madison on essay number 10 of the Federalist Papers where he says, democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention. Oh, wait, let me see here one moment.
All right, he's checking his notes there. Brian, why don't you dispense with the quote, because I get your point, and I do understand the issue. And, Rick, you know, should we be more precise in our use of the term democracy? Because what we do have is a Republican form of government that is participatory, but it is not direct, particularly at the federal level.
You know, I've done so many shows today, I can't remember, honestly, when I've made one point on which show. But I've talked about this repeatedly today, so apparently I haven't talked about it here, so let me talk about it here. The Founding Fathers did not set up a democracy. The caller is right. They set up a republic. And what's happened, though, is that there were democratic features to our government, and they have been expanded over time. So there's no question that we didn't start out as a democracy, but to argue that we're not a democracy today just flies in the face of the way the government actually runs.
But wouldn't that be the opposite of what the Founding Fathers set for us, though, when they're doing that? Because last I read, or pledge in the Pledge of Allegiance, it was to the Republic for which it stands rather than to the democracy. Or even when you read the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, any of the 50 states' constitutions, never once will they ever mention the word democracy one time, not in any of them. That's 51
sure.
constitutions without the word democracy once.
Sure. Well, democracy was a dirty word back in the era of the Founding Fathers. There were no successful examples of democracies lasting, and they were very, very concerned that even as a republic, we were going to be in danger of collapsing into either military despotism or civil war or some other social malady. So there's no question about it, but we did evolve. In part, you cite the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence has that wonderful line in it about all men are created equal. From the germ of that idea that's buried in those few words has sprung our democracy. Every generation has taken those words to heart, reinvented what it means to be an American, and reinvented us as a more democratic place, almost in a consistent line, although every once in a while, as after Reconstruction, we pulled back from it. But we have had an expansion of democracy almost consistently through our history. And, you know, if you want to say the Founding Fathers would be opposed to that, absolutely, that's true. I don't know where that gets us, but you can certainly make that argument cogently.
Brian, thanks for your comment. Anything you want to add?
Hey, I love your show. Check it out, bro. I'm a conservative Republican myself, but I can't stand these jerks like Rush Limbaugh and the guys from Fox News, so I'm always listening to your show. Even though I disagree with you on a lot of things, I still love your show.
Beautiful, Brian. You made my day.
All right. You have a good day. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Rick Shankman. Do you think George W. Bush is smart?
Well, I actually tackle this subject in the book. You know, I think that he's a lot smarter than he lets on. And it goes back to his 78 race for Congress in Texas. He got beat bad, and he got beat because...
He got a thumping?
He got a thumping. That's right. He got a thumping. And it was because he was easily caricatured as this scion of a rich and powerful family, and he had gone to East Coast schools, a prep school. He'd gone to Andover.
Elite.
That's
elite.
Right. And Yale and Harvard. And after that experience, he dumbed down his public image. I'm not saying that he's a genius, but he's a smarter man than he comes across, and he emphasizes his not being smart because he is trying to create an emotional bond between him and the audience. In other words, between him and the ordinary voter.
Mm-hmm.
American voters typically don't want their politicians to be elitist, to appear to be smarter than they are, and Bush understood that. Part of the reason his father was always running into trouble was because he did come across as elitist. Just the very way he talked about he'd want a dash of spice or something in his food, the way he held a cup of coffee. He never seemed like a real Texan. Well,
didn't know what a scanner was at the supermarket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, George W. Bush was an expert in studying his father's mistakes, and he figured this out pretty quickly.
I want to make worser ones. I gotta show up my daddy. We're gonna take a break and return. Rick Shankman, a fascinating new book, Just How Stupid Are We? It's a great read, subtitled Facing the Truth About the American Voter. We'll continue, and there's room for your call at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We call it the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Well, checking traffic for the final time this evening on KRXA, and not a whole lot to tell you about. That's good news. Morgan Hill West, Edmondson Avenue, at Loma Alta Court. Injury crash there in the final clearing stages. Looks like the cars have been cleared out of the way. You have CHP on the scene. Southbound 17, just before Bear Creek Road, we have reports of a big piece of metal that cars are swerving to avoid in the right-hand lane. Be on the lookout there. Highway 68, currently checking in, stalling accident-free. The Fishhook, Santa Cruz, South 17 over to Southbound 1, seeing some heavy traffic. Stop and go as you make your way southbound 1 down into Aptos and South 101. Heavy traffic starting at Coyote Creek Golf Drive. It's stop and go as you make your way down into Morgan Hill this evening. And this is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb? Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Want to save money, have fun, and walk a little lighter on the planet? Listen to Tomorrow Matters, talk radio for a better tomorrow, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., right here on KRXA 540 AM. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, as we bring in the experts to discuss how to cut energy costs, how to build community, and how to lower our ecological footprints. It's good for our pocketbooks, and it's good for the planet. And we have to, because tomorrow really does matter.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. We're talking with Rick Schenkman, a Seattle-based writer and journalist, 20 years in the television news business, and his new book, Just How Stupid Are We? Facing the Truth About the American Voter. Now, I may push you over the edge here, Rick, but I don't mind. I'm one of those crazy people who doesn't believe the official story about what happened on September 11th. I think they created some myths that have been propelled by the media, and that the 9/11 Commission did a very limited job of investigating and ultimately did whitewash many elements. They never explained the financial transactions, the people who made money on stocks, shorting airline stocks around 9/11. They've never explained how Building 7 came down, that the hole in the Pentagon wasn't big enough for a 757 to fly in and get swallowed up. And yet the media shows no interest in exposing what they could about the work of the 9/11 Commission, trying to contrast the public record and the real-time accounts with what we have been told. And David Ray Griffin, not a rocket scientist, but a retired theologian, has written six different books that show the contradictions between the physical evidence and the real-time accounts and what we have been told subsequently. And I believe we're developing into a kind of parallel universe where certain people hold truths that are not shared with other Americans. So with that, tell me your thoughts about how we resolve those discrepancies and this divide in the American public.
Well, while I would agree with you that the 9/11 Commission did not investigate everything, they had a somewhat confined mandate and they stuck to it. And that left some topics not fully pursued. And on my website, we've talked about that. But when you get to the question of, you know, did the Pentagon attack itself?
See, those are the canards that are floated when people want to obscure a search for the truth. I don't know exactly what happened. What I know is that what we've been told doesn't square with the facts, doesn't square with basic physics.
Well, you know, I already admitted, I think it was on this show, that I'm terrible at physics, so I'm not gonna argue the physics with you. I did do a documentary on the Pentagon, and I was there on the roof of the Pentagon. We looked at the hole. I interviewed dozens of Pentagon employees who were there that day, and I tell you, it would take an incredible conspiracy for all those people to have lied to my face and on camera about what had happened, what they saw, what they witnessed. So I guess I just don't buy that.
Okay, but what about the fundamental question that they've never really provided proof that it was a 757 that went into the Pentagon? They say it disintegrated. Well, there's no other example of a jet airliner that has had a huge contact like that and that has just, you know, disintegrated and crumbled.
Well, there were pieces of it. I mean, you could see it even when I was there. They still had the pieces lying around. So it didn't just completely disintegrate. There were pieces of the airplane there.
You mean on the lawn?
No, not on the lawn. Actually,
inside the building,
inside that giant hole. So there were pieces of the plane there. It didn't just you know, go up in a ball of fire and you couldn't find it.
Okay. So without getting bogged down in those specifics, you understand my point of view. How do we reconcile?
Well, let me let me make this not complicated. When I go around, I talk to college students, and they say they want to throw up their hands and say, how are we ever going to find out what's really going on? And I say, here's a simple, common-sense way, and you'll be a very educated voter if you do this. And it's very simple. One, read the paper that the rich and powerful people in this country are reading, which is the New York Times. Spend 5 minutes a day reading one meaty story on the front page. After 6 months, you'll start getting a command of what the basic facts are and the issues are that are facing the country. Then, of course, to correct for the Times' liberal bias, and I think it does have a liberal bias, I recommend that you read the National Review and the Weekly Standard, and they will challenge the conventional views that the New York Times advances. And then, on the left, I think you have to balance the Times on the other side, and I recommend that you read The Nation and Mother Jones. You do all that, and you know what? After 6 months, you'll have a very good idea of how the world actually works. And that's what journalism is all about. It's creating a picture in your mind that is fairly close to what actually happens out in the real world. And were we to do that, we wouldn't have the Iraq War, for instance, because you couldn't fool people into thinking that somehow Saddam and 9/11 were all tied up together. That's what we need to be focusing on. I know it's fun to talk about, or it's not fun, it's intellectually stimulating, I'll put it that way, to talk about the limits of our understanding of what happened on 9/11. I'm more concerned with just the basic things. You know, do people understand what the tax policies that McCain favors and the tax policies that Obama favors? Let me give you an example. Just a couple of weeks ago, on the front page of the New York Times, there was a story about John McCain has been going around the country claiming that Barack Obama is going to raise taxes on people of all backgrounds in this country. Then you turn to page A20, and they explain that, well, actually, Obama's got an $80 billion tax cut for lower income and lower middle class people. But McCain can get away was telling that untruthful statement to audience after audience because he's counting on people not knowing the details, not turning, in effect, to page A20 to find out what the facts are.
And that's not only, are people unwilling to do that, but the media has moved into stenography and generally just reports these things without questioning. And even when there's a blatant lie presented, they'll say, well, the other side is such and such. But they won't say, well, you know, that is not true. Rick Shankman, enjoyed spending this hour with you. I want to recommend your book, Just How Stupid Are We? Facing the Truth About the American Voter.
And I'll plug my blog, howstupidblog.com.
Howstupidblog.com. We'll check it out. Rick Shankman, thank you very much. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Keep smiling until...
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family...
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say...
and puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Nearly 12 years after the murder of JonBenet Ramsey, authorities in Boulder, Colorado have removed the umbrella of suspicion from her family.
District Attorney in Boulder has issued a letter that officially clears the Ramsey family, including John, Patsy, and their immediate family, of any involvement in the murder of their daughter, JonBenet, back in December 1996.
Producer Doug Longini has worked on this story for the CBS News broadcast 48 Hours. He says today's letter was prompted by new DNA evidence.
Tests were performed in recent months on her long underwear, her pull-ups. DNA was found on the waistband of those pull-ups. That DNA matches DNA that was found back in 1997. The DNA that it matches now does not belong to any member of the Ramsey family.
The DNA is from an unknown male. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen has been following this case.
Patsy Ramsey, the mother, is dead, and the police and prosecutors long ago decided that they could not go forward with a case against any other family member because of the presence of this unidentified DNA. So all this really does is make a case against an unidentified suspect a little bit stronger.
John Ramsey says it gives him a lot of comfort that investigators are focused on finding his six-year-old daughter's killer. For the first time since he was diagnosed with brain cancer, Ted Kennedy returned to the Senate today. CBS News correspondent Chip Reed has the story.
Senator Kennedy, accompanied by Barack Obama, walked onto the Senate floor to a thunderous standing ovation. Members of both parties surrounded him, taking turns welcoming him back. Kennedy, who's been home in Massachusetts undergoing chemotherapy, returned to vote for a Medicare bill that would avert a rate cut for doctors. The bill passed. Kennedy, accompanied by his wife Victoria and son Patrick, left to return home immediately after the vote.
Kennedy told reporters he's feeling better and looks forward to coming back to the Senate. Earlier, the Senate approved a terrorist surveillance bill that President Bush says he can sign. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has that.
Though the bill puts in some additional oversight by judges, it provides broad power to the government to monitor communications looking for terrorists. And it gives retroactive immunity to phone companies who may have helped spy on millions of Americans without warrants. President Bush insisted on that since his administration asked them to do it. But Democrats...